You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is comedian Paul Farvar. Hey, Paul, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
Hey, Craig, can you roll out those clips that are in that first thing? It was Star Wars music, and then these are some of the best lines that Carrie Fisher had.
And
now, I can't believe you've never seen Star Wars. So I think that if you haven't seen Star Wars, these are, in fact, some of my favorite Princess Leia lines from the movies.
I should have expected to find you holding Vader's leash. I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
It's a little short for a stormtrooper.
This is some rescue. Into the garbage, you flyboy.
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
You hear nothing?
You're braver than I thought.
I just assumed it's a Wookiee.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
You don't have to do this to impress me.
Would it help if I got out and pushed?
Captain, being held by you isn't quite enough to get me excited.
Someday you're going to be wrong, and I just don't have to see it.
I am not a committee!
I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure that Princess Leia had all the best lines. What do you mean, what does nerf herder mean? I'm not going to discuss this with you if you haven't seen any of the movies. No, Paul Farvar, but you have seen some of the other Carrie Fisher movies.
I saw Star Wars in the theater, but I never saw it again. So I don't remember anything. And then I went.
You're a little short for a stormtrooper. It's a great line.
I don't remember any of that. I did see the one last Christmas.
With General Leia?
General, yeah, right.
She's a general at that point.
I figured it out, but no,
I don't think you're the right person to have this conversation with.
I love Carrie Fisher in other movies, and I actually read part of her book. I think she's a great person.
Part of her book, books.
Well, her autobiography.
There are many books. Well, there's Postcards from the Edge, Wishful Drinking, and Princess Diarist, just to name a few of the books that she's written.
Well, I didn't know this was going to be a fan club show. Had
just
I known,
bit.
I would have brought my.
I have been fascinated with Carrie Fisher from the first time I saw her on screen, and the things that I've learned, not even knowing anything about her personal life, I think I would have been enamored with the portrayal she had of Princess Leia. And actually, in one of those first scenes where she actually has a little bit of a British accent, I think she was trying to find the character. She was 19 years old when she was cast
right.
as Princess Leia. But the things that I've learned about her and her personal life, you know, along the way, and in particular, I guess today, I did more research and I watched a lot of interviews with her. There was an interview she did in 2011 with Oprah Winfrey, and her mother Debbie Reynolds came out, and they did an interview together and they did a duet together. Esmeralda, have you ever watched any of the interviews? There have been a few in the last year, obviously, where she has brought, Carrie Fisher brought her dog with her, whether it was to Stephen Colbert or Good Morning America. She's been kind of a trip this last year.
And, I haven't seen any.
Oh, she talks about having an affair with Harrison Ford.
I did hear about
that. I read that.
Yeah. I don't know how much we need to know, but the thing is that the fact that Carrie Fisher wanted to share that, I kind of embrace that. I you know, as someone who has no shame in sharing my personal story, and of course, because Carrie Fisher is someone who is so public, and in the, not just because she was a star herself, her mother was such a tremendous Hollywood icon. Mm-hmm. She was cast in Singing in the Rain when she was 19 years old. She had been a performer since she was 10. And I had only in the last few weeks actually read interviews about her experience in Singing in the Rain, which sounded horrible. Gene Kelly would make her rehearse and dance and dance and dance for hours, from like 10 to 12 hours, still not thinking she was good enough, hating the way she sounded when she danced, and still dubbed his own footwork over hers. And so it kind of shapes a little bit even more the narrative that Carrie Fisher brings when she talks about being a woman in Hollywood and the struggles she had both with addiction and mental illness. She was very forward about that, very brave. She said she won more awards for being mentally ill than she did for anything else. Basically, she had this attitude of better me than you. You know, that she said, bring it on. And tragically, Carrie Fisher passed away today at the age of 60. We know that she had suffered a heart attack, a major cardiac incident on a flight. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, it's one thing. People have been reacting this last year to very high profile deaths in different ways. Some people are very cynical about it. But a friend of mine has written a great short piece on Facebook. We'll read that when we come back from the break. But I am affected by both the passing of Carrie Fisher and this weekend of George Michael. You and I talked recently how much your favorite Christmas song is.
Yeah, Last Christmas.
Is Last Christmas. I don't understand that. But that's okay. It's a good song.
It's a great song. He was a great. We'll talk about him.
So good. So very, very good. But my son Griffin, so what I was going to say, it's one thing for me to feel the loss. And we've talked about, what does it mean? Why do we care when celebrities pass away? Why do, you know, what difference does it make? We didn't know them. But there are ways that we do know them, because we knew a little bit more about ourselves in enjoying their art. And that's part of what I think hurts.
Well, I think someone like Carrie Fisher, it played such a pivotal point, part of your life. And it just makes death more real.
You know? It reminds you, right, that this is fleeting.
Yeah, it reminds you that this is how all of it, how it all ends.
It comes for all of us.
Yeah.
And for my son, who is 13 years old, when he found out on Friday, I picked him up from school on Friday, and we did some quick Christmas shopping. And we got home, and I forget now, like, he gets home, when he starts doing his homework, that also means he gets online, and he starts Googling things, and news stories pop up. And I hear him start yelling from the living room, "Why didn't you tell me?" Well, you know, that Carrie Fisher had a heart attack. And I thought, well, what am I going to tell you? There's nothing we can do if she's in the hospital. And I said, if something had happened, I assure you I would have told you. He was very upset. Well, today he was caroling. He was singing. He's in a choir, and he was singing at a retirement home. And the church leader that had brought them to the event wanted to take a photo of the choir members, and went to turn his phone on and went, "Oh, Carrie Fisher died," and then started taking the picture. And Griffin was like, "That's how I find out?" Mm-hmm. And what a bizarre moment that the guy just, "Oh yeah, by the way, I saw this on my feed." But that's how we're learning everything these days, is on
that's
our
how,
feed.
Yeah, I mean, at every death, even I remember I learned Michael Jackson on Twitter. I mean, that's how you learn everything now.
Well, we can find out about it sort of in an inconsequential way and feel it very strongly. We're going to talk about this more after the break, but give us a call, 312-981-7200. I think that there are a lot of important artistic individuals who've passed away this year that have had an impact. And we're feeling them heavily.
I feel like every time I've been on the show, somebody has passed away. Remember we found out about Florence Henderson while we were on the air.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why, but I was upset on Friday when I heard about Carrie Fisher having a heart attack. But I wept. I was surprised at learning about George Michael, how upsetting that was. I don't know if it's because I just didn't realize how much his music was really the background, the soundtrack to my teenage years or my childhood, really. I actually have a story on stage that I do that I'll tell you about off the air. More of this on 720 WGN. You'll have to get a recording of that somehow.
Good to see you, sweetheart.
You contemptible pig. I remained celibate for you. I stood at the back of a cathedral, waiting in celibacy for you, with 300 friends and relatives in attendance. My uncle hired the best Romanian caterers in the state. To obtain the 7 limousines for the wedding party, my father used up his last favors with Mad Pete Trullo. So for me, for my mother, my grandmother, my father, my uncle, and for the common good, I must now kill you and your brother.
As much as I love Carrie Fisher in that scene, I also love Dan Aykroyd, who's like, he starts to be like, well, wait, what's happening? What's going on here? Why does she have is it a missile launcher that she has, or is it a rifle? I think it's a missile, like a rocket launcher.
It's some sort of launching device, correct.
It's one of the great scenes in the movie that you're like, wait a minute, why is this woman chasing them? Yeah. We are talking about the passing of Carrie Fisher. She passed away today at the age of 60. I was watching an interview that she did with Oprah Winfrey in 2011, and I saw the movie Postcards from the Edge, in which Meryl Streep actually plays a character based on Carrie Fisher that she had created in her book Postcards from the Edge. And there's a lot of great scenes, but Shirley MacLaine essentially plays Debbie Reynolds in the movie. And, you know, the sort of relationship they had as Carrie Fisher was growing up in the shadow of the superstar mom. But I also did not realize, because I, you know, as my kids won't understand the sort of like whatever, whether it's Brangelina and all these like huge tabloid stories about all these couples that we really shouldn't care about. But yet there was, you know, here's Carrie Fisher, this child whose mom is a huge star. Her dad is a huge star, Eddie Fisher. Mm-hmm. Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds were best friends with Elizabeth Taylor and Mike Todd. Debbie Reynolds was Elizabeth Taylor's matron of honor. and Eddie Fisher was Mike Todd's best man at their wedding.
Who's Mike Todd?
He was a big star at the time.
Okay.
Who ultimately died in a plane crash. And when we're going to play this later, actually. I should wait because Carrie Fisher also wrote a one-woman show. She performed her book, Wishful Drinking, on stage and tells these great stories about growing up in the shadow of her parents' relationship. And her mom, she also tells this great story about she would wake up in the morning and her mom was her mom. But she had this closet with all of her makeup and her wardrobe, and her mom would walk into the closet as her mom and walk out the other end as Debbie Reynolds, this Hollywood icon. And we are also talking about what it means to lose a celebrity and why some people are very cynical about it. They're like, you know, I don't care. Why are we spending so much time about that? Maybe it's because I'm also a performer and a writer, and I aspire to some of the things to be as clever, as funny, as insightful as Carrie Fisher was in her writing, to be as vulnerable as she was in her acting, to be as brave as she was to share her story of mental illness in so many ways. But this is from a friend of mine who's been on the show before, one of the great guests of our show, Patricia Nelson. And she's been reading a lot of responses, not just to what she has posted. Over the years, she was devastated by the passing of David Bowie. Many of us were affected by Alan Rickman, Gene Wilder. There's so many to even
Prince.
Name. Prince, Muhammad Ali.
Gary Shandling.
Oh, for comics, that was a brutal one, too. He had a significant impact on our careers and who we are as comics, as writers. So this is what Patricia writes. She writes, I've held my tongue long enough about all the sarcastic, bitter BS about people reacting to some of the most phenomenal and influential icons of our generation passing this year. It seems for every really heartfelt confession of being devastated by a loss in real time, there is someone mitigating and invalidating and trivializing their feelings. I'm not done saying anything. You can have your opinions. You can be hard and cynical and dismissive of the legitimate influence these people had over those who express grief. I'm not going to tell you how and what to feel. That would make me a hypocrite. I will say, with all the artistic talent we've lost this year, if not one of them moved, inspired, influenced, or helped shape who you've become, if not one of them was someone whose artistry you turned to for consolation and connection through your own grief or sought them out to distract you from the stressors of your life or are interwoven into some of your most cherished memories with friends, families, and lovers to the point where you would feel a loss at them shedding this mortal coil, then I kind of feel sorry for you. I didn't grieve for anyone who passed this year, but a couple, for everyone who passed this year, but a couple were devastating to me because we were close. We shared wonderful times. They helped me through heartbreak. They gave me sage advice when I needed it. They taught me things I use every day in my tangible relationships. They helped mold me. They inspired my own creativity, taught me how to love and give, and how to survive and thrive beyond heartache and loss. So go ahead and be glib and snide. I'll be over here with a warm sadness, knowing I was lucky to have existed on this planet with them and blessed enough to have been given the gift of their art. And I don't care how you feel about my feelings or anyone else's grief. Though I guess I'm a bit of a hypocrite and that this is my opinion about your feelings or lack thereof. But you know what? Screw it. This is my page and I'll say whatever I want. And I'm editing, by the way.
You can tell where you're editing along the way.
Yes, a little bit. But I mean, there is something to that. And George Michael, I was surprised because I was sad when Prince passed away, and Craig and I've talked about this, how I love music, but I don't know music. I couldn't sing you any of the lyrics of a Prince song. I mean, when it comes on, I start dancing. I'm like, oh, I love this song. Mm-hmm. But when George Michael passed away, I was caught off guard at how much that meant to me. I don't know if it was Faith or if it was Careless Whisper. Of course, we played Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go every night for 6 months. And that was sort of a wonderful moment every single night. Because I would dance and, you know, there was joy to that music. But there was also a wonderful vulnerability to George Michael and his music.
Everybody liked his music. I mean, I played in enough bands where we had a few George Michael cover songs. And like when things weren't going well at a show, we could always go play Faith and get everybody back. I mean, it's so funny that it hits so many different generations. Even the kids now are like, oh, that's a classic, even though it's like it's right. the '80s.
It still feels
but it's
new.
It's such a good song.
It's such
and
a good
freedom
song.
Is. I mean, I do a little mixed on like a playlist on my phone every season. And I always have at least one George Michael song. And it pops up. It's like this time it was Freedom before he passed away. And it comes on. It's a great song. It's a great written song. And you can't deny that he was great.
Well, I just want someone to check out Cyndi Lauper before it's too late. More after this on 720 WGN.
But you guys were a couple. You had someone to go places with. You had a date on national holidays.
I said to myself, you deserve more than this. You're 31 years old.
And the clock is ticking.
No, the clock doesn't really start to tick until you're 36.
God, you're in such great shape.
Well, I've had a few days to get used to it, and I feel okay.
Good. Then you're ready.
Really, Marie?
Well, how else do you think you'd do it?
I've got the perfect guy. I don't happen to find him attractive, but you might. She doesn't have a problem with chins.
Marie, I'm not ready yet.
You just said you were over him.
I am over him, but I'm in a mourning period. Who is it?
Alex Anderson.
Oh! You fixed me up with him 6 years ago.
I'm sorry.
God. All right, wait, here. Here we go. Ken Darman.
He's been married for over a year.
Really? Married.
Oh, wait. Wait, wait.
Look.
I got one.
There is no point in my going out with someone I might really like if I met him at the right time, but who right now has no chance of being anything to me but a transitional man.
Okay. But don't wait too long. Remember what happened with David Warsaw? His wife left him and everyone said, give him some time, don't move in too fast. 6 months later, he was dead.
What are you saying? I should get married to someone right away in case he's about to die?
At least you could say you were married. I'm saying that the right man for you might be out there right now, and if you don't grab him, someone else will, and you'll have to spend the rest of your life knowing that someone else is married to your husband.
That's Carrie Fisher in the film When Harry Met Sally. And I do forget that she played such a great role in that movie. And Bruno Kirby, by the way, who is incredibly funny, who is gnawing with us as well. But Carrie Fisher was wonderful.
He's gone too?
Yeah, he's been gone for a while. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break the news to you that way.
I just remember that movie when they were that old and they were like 36. I was young. I'm like, oh wow.
Look at them.
Like, when I saw the movie, I was like, oh wow, that's so long in the future. And now I'm like, oh, I'm almost 36.
Well, as somebody who hosts,
Let's say that. That's
well,
what it says on my Tinder profile.
Does it ask your age on your Tinder profile?
Yeah, all that stuff says that.
It does. Oh, do you tell your real age?
Yeah, you have to.
Because
it's connected to your Facebook thing.
But you don't have to tell your truth on your Facebook page either.
I guess you're right.
Yeah, why would you? I don't understand.
I don't know. I thought Facebook is like the government. Like they'll be like, oh, you said he was born in 79.
You're allowed a certain number of times that you can change your age. And it'll ask you, are you sure? On your last time, it'll say, are you sure you want to change?
This is the last time?
This is the last time you can change your age. Not that I've pushed it.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you can definitely change your age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that young people are confident enough to give their real age. I don't know. I would suggest strongly against anyone putting their age on anything. If like even when I'm asked for my important like private information, let's say I'm talking to like HR or something with my benefits, as it happened today with my wage works. I was trying to take care of some FlexBen stuff and they asked me my age and I said 817. And they said year, and I'm like, isn't that close enough? Haven't you got enough? And aren't I going the
They
right
ask
direction?
You at the pharmacy now, too.
I'm How like, old you are?
They ask, what's your date of birth? And I just say, I always say that 217.
So. Right. Well, because they want to make sure that they're giving you the right dose for your height and weight, maybe. Like weight and age.
Yeah, it's possible.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I think I'm going to change that. That's awesome. That means I can be in the bracket for the lower bracket.
Change your bracket.
Yeah, I got to do that.
I don't know.
Some girl today, I was hosting a show and it was her birthday and she didn't want to say her age. And then another female comic asked her and she's like, I'm 28. I was like,
why didn't you tell the guy?
What's that? I don't ask their age.
Yeah, you should. I don't think age is important unless you are under 21. Actually, maybe 25 when you can get a good deal on your car rental agreement.
You have to be 25.
In your insurance. Some rental agencies, but some would go down to 18.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Some are maybe 21.
I think it's 25 for most.
For the most part. We rented a car when I was graduating from college for our cross-country road trip, and we were all under. There was only one company I remember that rented the car. I believe it was
Hertz.
And
they're no longer in business.
Maybe. They didn't know we were going to take the car to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't doing like a Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise
No,
off the
we were not doing that.
Right.
But I have to say that, being someone who hosts Singles Only as a podcast,
yes,
and a movie like When Harry Met Sally, does that any of that at all translate? today.
I haven't seen the movie recently, but yeah, I think a lot of that stuff, it's still, I bet you it still holds, other than the phone issue. Because I think you go back to all those movies and there's phones, everyone's like, oh, answering machine. It's like,
sure.
Someone leaves you a message on your cell phone, you're like, who are you? Like, what?
Well, there is a scene where Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher are in bed together, and they're each on the phone with with Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal, which leads to hilarity.
Yeah. But that could still work.
That would definitely still
work. Other than there being a cord attached to the
phone. Remember the wagon wheel coffee table?
I do.
Carrie Fisher does not want that wagon wheel coffee table.
Yeah.
And Bruno Kirby
is a great movie.
It's a wonderful movie. I remember dating a boy in high school and college. Let's call him Jason because that was his name. And he would make references to how we were like When Harry Met Sally because we were kind of friends in high school. But it was weird to have a 19-year-old tell you that you're like When Harry Met Sally because it's almost like too deep for a guy to sort of have that perspective.
I said that
in high school.
I said there was a girl that was my friend that we started dating, and we were like Harry Met Sally. I mean, we thought, but then she was crazy. And then
so was Sally. I mean, that's kind of
right.
And
so
I think
it made sense.
And I kind of felt like that's what Jason was saying to me was that I was kind of. I might not put my sauce or my dressing on the side and be particular about that. Yeah. He called me squirrely, and I don't think that was a compliment at all to be called squirrely. Anyway,
Sally's squirrely. Well, the thing is, that movie has survived because when we were making, I have a show where we spoof movies to promote it, Drink, Date, Laugh. And we did like a lot of movies and we did Harry Met Sally, and people remember, they all know the orgasm scene.
Right.
But we spoofed like Ghost and people like the younger generation. Wait, what movie is that? You're like, are you kidding me? So that didn't survive. But Harry Met Sally did. It's a movie that survives.
By the way, speaking of because I live my life in memes. Have you seen the meme today with Whoopi Goldberg in her garb in Ghost, and it says 2016 is taking celebrities. You in danger, girl. Watch out, Cher.
Cher.
Everybody
had like a name today on Twitter. Everyone was like, watch out, like if someone check on Betty White or whoever.
Right. Who's the person that you wouldn't want to see go? None of that. I don't want to see any of them go. But who's the person you're? Is there anyone you're
so
worried
many
about?
People, yeah.
There's so many people.
Well, now with George Michael, he was 53. That's like he wasn't even on the radar to being sick or anything like that. Prince was very young. A lot of the younger ones this year.
Yeah, there's a whole. Obviously, there's a lot of quotes by Carrie Fisher circulating online today. There are a few there. I love this. There is no point at which you can say, well, I'm successful now. I might as well take a nap, which I love that. I mean, she was always busy. She was always working.
Yeah.
I think that people I think for the most part, everyone knows that she was a tremendous writer. And the things that she said, we were watching her last interview with Stephen Colbert, where she was talking about how much they wanted her to lose weight for the first Star Wars. And she said they only wanted 3/4 of me, but they didn't want the fourth. And then she made a joke about they didn't want the fourth to be with me.
Yeah.
And Stephen Colbert, sometimes you don't quite get that someone just made a joke. And she was like, hey, I just wrote a joke.
Yeah.
And that's what's such a comic's mind, like, hey, wait a minute. But as Carrie Fisher, she gets to stop Stephen Colbert and go, you just stepped on my punchline.
Right.
It was kind of wonderful.
Yeah, she was, she was a force. Oh. And she's done more in her life than 99% of us will ever do.
But so much of the, I don't know, she definitely had so many ups and downs along the way.
Yeah.
But the way she cut through with it really seems to have been with a lot of wit. And I so admire her for that. And she would say things like, here's another quote from Carrie Fisher, stay afraid, but do it anyway. What's important is the action. You don't have to wait to be confident. Just do it. And eventually the confidence will follow. I think there's a lot to
that.
Truth in that. Yeah. Absolutely. Please stop debating about whether or not I aged well for Carrie Fisher. And that was something too, like a lot of people were taken aback. Whether it's been over the last few years or maybe the first time you saw her again was in The Force Awakens. But, you know, she gets to get older. You know, we've watched Harrison Ford get older on screen. We've seen him gray because he's constantly working. She has been writing and doing other work. Mm-hmm. She hasn't been on screen as much. So maybe, you know, you don't see her progressively get older. But she said, please stop debating about whether or not I've aged well. Unfortunately, it hurts all three of my feelings. My body hasn't aged as well as I have. She says something I can't say on the air. Youth and beauty are not accomplishments.
Right.
I love that about her. Yeah. Youth and beauty are not accomplishments.
Well,
There you go.
Hopefully when I turn 35, I'll remember.
Wow, you're aging backwards. Weren't you 36 a few minutes ago?
The Persian Benjamin Buttons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She also talked a lot about how she was the only, pretty much the only woman on the set of Star Wars, obviously.
Yeah.
And she said that being in a male-dominated environment like that, where the crew is male, the actors are male, the writers and directors, everyone is male. She said, and it's like being an overqualified spice sprinkled on top of everything else.
Overqualified. The,
yeah. Well, because she said
that sounds sexist.
Overqualified spice. She's saying the men are the meat, and she's just the spice sprinkled on. Overqualified spice.
I still don't get it.
I know.
It's the other stuff I got.
It's because you're a dude.
And I didn't see Star Wars.
Wait, who's George S. Irving? Who's the heat miser? I don't know. Todd Chuchuk just messaged me that George S. Irving has just passed. There's more people going as we speak. There's still 4 days left in the year. Now we're learning
George
more.
George S. Irving?
He's the heat miser in the Christmas special with the cold miser and the heat miser.
That's what I was going to say.
The Year Without a Santa Claus, I think it's called.
So he's the voice of the heat miser?
Apparently.
Oh. Yeah, Tony Award in 1973, apparently.
The Tony Award.
Well, that's what comes up when you...
312-981-7200 if you have any more updates for people who have passed away in the last 15 minutes. I feel like we're on death watch now. This is horrible.
Well, he seems like he was pretty old.
When we come back, by the way, we have Steve and Johnny coming on at midnight. Very excited to welcome them in the studio. They have, of course, their New Year's Eve extravaganza coming up this Saturday night. We'll check in with them after midnight. More after this on 720 WGN.
My father, my mother, Mike Todd, and his fiance, who happened to be Elizabeth Taylor. Well, you know, they went everywhere together, right? I mean, they went to nightclubs. They went on cruises. They traveled the world. So when Mike and Elizabeth got married, my father was Mike Todd's best man, and my mother was Elizabeth's matron of honor. About a year later, Mike Todd took off in a private plane in a rainstorm.
Miss Taylor was in a state of collapse following the death of her husband in a plane crash.
And the following morning, Elizabeth was a widow. Well, you know, naturally, my father flew to Elizabeth's side, gradually making his way slowly to her front. He dried her eyes with his handkerchief. He consoled her with flowers. And ultimately, he consoled her with his
I'll go ahead and say it. He consoled her with his penis, is what she says in that one woman show.
I think we could figure that out. Yeah.
It was a very honest one woman show that Carrie Fisher was never ashamed to share her real story and her take on what happened in her life, her very public life, from the moment she was born.
Yeah.
And in the interview that she has with Oprah Winfrey, which you can find online, she talks about how, you know, when a baby is born, everyone's focus and attention is on the baby and people lavish the baby with gifts and she's the center of attention. But in a celebrity's family, the center of attention is the celebrity. And so Debbie Reynolds is the one that everyone pays attention to. And so she kind of grew up as this kid. And also, I watched an interview, and I know Nick D watches a lot of every night he watches the Johnny Carson episodes that are replayed every single night. And I watched the first time Carrie Fisher was ever on with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. And it's kind of hard to watch because Johnny sort of cues up the entire interview, stumbling across her intro. It's a little bit rough getting started, and she's already very nervous. Whenever Johnny Carson had a guest who was a child actor, or anybody who, and I guess he would do it for people who are short, it's just kind of weird when you do it to an adult. They had that little footstool that would roll out. Esmeralda, have you ever watched this where they, so that short people
it
could
pops
put their,
up.
Well, it doesn't pop up, it slides out from underneath the chair, and Ed McMahon slides it out. And I get that she was shorter, but I think she would have been fine. But it also, it sort of accentuates the fact that she's a smaller person, and it was, and it also makes her legs go up a little bit higher, and she's got like a skirt on. It was weird. The whole thing was awkward. And it was not funny because Johnny Carson was brilliant at making everyone funny. Have you ever watched it, Esmeralda, where Johnny Carson has a guest that the footstool has to come out for?
I think that footstool was there even past Johnny Carson because I feel like I've seen it
before. Oh, did Jay Leno use it too?
I feel like I've seen that where it just slides out and people point it out because it's kind of weird.
It is. I get it for kids, But when it's an adult who just happens to be short, it's sort of strange.
Dr. Ruth Westheimer, she's
absolutely. I'm sure that she absolutely needed it.
I remember when she'd come on.
But Johnny was generally great at making guests even funnier and more entertaining than maybe they might have been. Mm-hmm. But with Carrie Fisher, and I'm sure this happened other times, it was a kind of an awkward conversation, but it was still fascinating. It just wasn't filled with a lot of energy. But Carrie Fisher was talking about how she spent several years in Vegas as part of her mother's stage show that she did. And she was telling these great stories about how she would use the paging system at the hotel and be like, Greta Garbo, someone's looking for you by the pool. And people were looking around like maybe Greta Garbo would be there and use all these fake names. And she was telling stories about how she would throw surprise parties for people whose birthday it was not. And she said, isn't that the best surprise of all? Because it's not your birthday. Yeah. And just these really charming stories. And she also talked a lot about being in Star Wars. And it was the other thing that was obvious, I don't think Johnny Carson saw any of the Star Wars movies. So he didn't quite get...
I'm not the only one.
Yeah, you've never seen any of the other Star Wars movies. So you saw the first one as a child, and it just...
I think so.
It didn't hold your interest at all?
Yeah, I don't like science and stuff. I think I saw Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi.
So they just didn't speak to you. There's nothing about the Star Wars genre.
Yeah, I don't think I got it.
What was confusing about it?
I don't know. I would look in... My brother would explain it to me, I think. Like the Star Trek stuff I kind of got. I did see some of the Star Treks. But like I don't know. Like once something's sci-fi, it loses interest for me.
Star Wars is not sci-fi.
Well,
it's fantasy.
That's what I heard.
It's fantasy.
I just didn't... I don't know. I didn't see
Star Trek is sci-fi.
I like deeper movies. Like, I don't know what they are.
Yeah, I can see how deep you are. I like deeper movies, like the ones that I can't name. Like what?
I saw
The English Patient? Is that your...
No, I liked...
There's a lot of sand in
Beautiful
that movie.
Girls was a really good movie I liked in the 90s.
Beautiful Girls.
That's a great movie. But wait, I want to say... The one thing about Carrie Fisher, I will say, and I'm fascinated by her story, and that's why I got her book, mm-hmm. was that seeing people who had to... grow up in the shadows of someone that's so larger than life. And she did a great job of almost surpassing, if not...
I would say she has.
She surpassed
And Debbie Reynolds makes an aside of that on the Oprah Winfrey interview mm-hmm. where she said that she was... Because when Carrie Fisher was a child in school, her teachers would call her Debbie. And then, you know, and Debbie goes, that's okay. When, you know, now people just know me as Princess Leia's mom.
Yeah.
And she sounded a little bit bitter
about
it.
That's cool. I'm always fascinated by people that have surpassed their parents or that had that privilege and stuff.
It was a lot of privilege.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
But I also did not know that Debbie Reynolds, after she divorced Mike Todd, who went on to marry Elizabeth Taylor, she married somebody else who was a millionaire or a multimillionaire. And was a big that was Jackie O.
Oh, I'm getting confused. I saw the movie JFK. I like that one.
Did you see it? Have you seen Jackie as well?
Not yet, but I do want to see that.
Why would you say that? Why would you even bring up JFK and misunderstand who Onassis was and Jackie O?
Well, you said million. That's the name that.
That's the only
up.
Millionaire you know of.
That was in
is
that time
Onassis.
Frame. Well, who was it? You don't know the name.
I don't need Debbie Reynolds' husband in the situation.
Mr. Reynolds. Reynolds rap.
He squandered all of their money. She ended up having to live in her car because he gambled all of their money, her money, all of her paychecks were garnished. She owed money on the taxes. Yeah. So
that was an Onassis.
That was not an Onassis. I don't even know. You need to leave the studio. You're just babbling now.
I mean,
I do it all the time, but now you're just filled with misinformation and misunderstanding. Yeah, go watch Star Wars. I can hook that up for you in the green room. More after this on 720 WGN.
Turn your lights down, way down low. But turn up that radio. It's Steve and Johnny. Know just what that do, Steve and Johnny and Steve. Now you know where to go when you need a friend. Well, just tune your radio to WGN. No more blue Chicago night. Make you feel all right. Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve. I would love to be one.
Oh, I want Steve and Johnny back on the air. It's so funny. Whenever you post that you're coming on the show, people say how much they miss you, and I miss you as well.
Oh, just hearing that song, though, I can't tell you what I got done during that song. Go to the bathroom, get two cups of coffee, get the guest into the studio, get everything set up, water. Woo! Now we get to the long instrumental piece.
Did we ever tell you the story about why that theme was the way it was?
As long as it was.
I want to know.
Because we followed Milt Rosenberg.
Sure.
Okay. Same studio. Milt, when his show would be over, he wouldn't just leave. He's standing there, and he's talking with all of his guests, and they're recapping everything.
And they're oblivious to us. We're
trying to get in and get things set up, get our guests, get our band set up and everything else. So we talked to Bob and said, Bob, could you do kind of a long theme so we have the option of going? And he said, okay, I'll do this, and then I'll put in a long instrumental break, and then I'll come back and sing. So that was why the theme was as long as it was.
And so when the instrumental would start, we would say, okay, everybody, clear the studio. And they're like, oh, there are people here?
Oh, my. There's more
to
do. There
were times when Milt and his guests would look up and say, we have to leave?
Here.
Yeah, you have to leave.
Yeah. I can't even imagine because I always, because when the next host comes in, whether it's, you know, Nick D broadcasts from upstairs, but if Matt Bubal is here and Justin Kaufman, when I come in, he's always great about packing up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I try in the segment before the end of the show, during that break, I try to start packing things up so that I'm not in the way, because sometimes there's a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah.
And I shuttle my guests into the green room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I can't imagine like trying to get your show started.
Yeah.
So that music, does it give you any anxiety, or is it nostalgia? What is it?
Because it was funny because I literally replayed what I was doing every single night, and it was always the same thing. You run to the bathroom, you check your hair, you grab your coffee, you get the water.
Efficiency experts should learn from all night radio people. The amount of things you can do in 3 minutes. Incredible.
Amazing. Yeah.
I take my chances sometimes because tonight actually I went upstairs to get coffee
wrong.
Right. When you put the elevator in the middle of your equation, that's when anything can go wrong. Although I do know where the stairwells are.
Yeah.
So if worse came to worse, if you know, when it's the break during the news before Rob gets to the, you know, traffic, weather and sports, I still have enough time to get down here on the elevator. If it's, you know, too much past it, I'm like, now I'm really pushing it.
Yeah.
Or when the show starts. And I have learned from the master of being late, which is Steve Cochran.
You think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember when he would start his show from the car? He would call it.
Golly.
Yeah, I had Dan Long was producing my show last week, and he called. I was in the elevator. And he goes, are you almost here? I'm like, yeah, I'm in the elevator.
Uh-huh. That's close enough for Jess.
It's 11:01. I'm golden, friends.
Yeah, right. We're good. Yeah.
Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve are in studio with me tonight, but they will be here on Saturday night, New Year's Eve, from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. It's their cheap date, Life After Dark, New Year's Eve extravaganza, and Eric wants to join their conversation. Hey, Eric, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I just wanted to call and say hi to Steve and Johnny. And Johnny, I'm your pigtail connection.
Oh, gosh.
Your pigtail connection?
I like pigtails.
Hello? So do I.
I eat pickled pigtails.
I thought you meant wearing pigtails. I wear pigtails all the time. I thought you meant my braids. I thought we were doing...
I like those, too.
You mean pig's tails?
Yes.
So pig's tails.
Yeah.
It's a food, Paul.
I don't think
I wish you could see the look on Paul's face right now.
I have to look up things a lot.
A pig has a little curly tail,
right?
And Eric, it's kind of a southern delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a regional thing.
Is it chewy? Is it crispy?
It's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is because my dad's listening. Bless his heart. He's going, don't say that. We're going to sound like hillbillies.
No, I'm with you on fun food. I love fun food.
So they're pickled, right, Eric? And they're gelatinous because they're pig meat.
Okay,
so
you're losing me now, but go ahead.
All right. And they're great fun in bars because when you put it in your mouth and you pull it between your teeth, it goes doing and it curls.
So you kind of pull the meat off with your teeth and then you have the curly bone?
As opposed to sucking on a pig's foot.
Sure. Yeah, you know, yeah. That's, you know, which, by the way,
that's kind of gross.
I'll take your word for it, Johnny. I didn't.
You just supplied them.
I just kind of boxed them up. But.
Wait, Eric, you've boxed up pigtails for Johnny, but never had one yourself?
No.
Oh,
it's like the dope dealer. You know,
see, the supplier doesn't use the product.
Yeah.
So it's the actual pigtail.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Eric, where are you calling from?
Are you Googling this to see what they look?
Yeah.
Eric, where are you?
I'm calling from Galesburg.
Oh, Galesburg, Illinois. Yeah. I love Galesburg.
Yeah, lovely Galesburg. And Eric, you listened, I think, just about every night, didn't you, working?
Did you listen? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, are you still
just
working?
Just say yes, Eric.
Yes. Just smile and nod. We'll take that as an answer as well. Yeah. It's radio. We take that.
I can't be in connection anymore. I retired from. I had some health problems.
Oh dear.
And but I can still probably grab some for you.
No, that's okay.
And the statute of limitations is up. So.
Thank you, Eric. Nice talking to you.
Eric, thank you so much. And tune in to Steve and Johnny on New Year's Eve as well.
Yes.
You have so many stories. So many people reached out to you and shared their lives with you, which happens on the daily for us, too.
Out of all the people to call in.
Eric with his pigtails? Sure. That's okay. But like delicacies, that's something. When you say you like something and people start sending you that, though, because I also, chicharron is. That's pigskin.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
fried pigskin. Right. So I could see liking different things that are sort of unique. But when someone starts sending you gelatinous pig's tails, is your dad going to be mad at me for continuing the conversation about the pig's tails?
He loves you, so it's okay.
Well, that's very nice of him.
Did we ever tell you the cheesecake/security story?
No.
Right here.
Can we tease people with that? Tell us about the cheesecake/security story.
Yes.
There's cheesecake and there's cheesecakes, like pig's tails and pigtails. Right?
Yeah. Wait, cheese steak or cheesecake?
Cheesecake.
Okay, good. Although both would be acceptable.
Okay.
More after this on 720 WG. And it's Steve and Johnny, because on Saturday night they've got their cheap Date Life After Dark New Year's Eve extravaganza.
Gotta have faith.
You are listening pretty late. I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian Paul Farvar, who hosts tonight at the Rosanies in Rosemont.
Yep.
And he'll be out there again next Tuesday as well?
No, I'm not there next
All right, then
Tuesday.
Never mind.
I don't know where I am next
Tuesday. Yeah, well.
It's the new year.
It's the new year. It's true. We'll
it's
be the new
year. You.
It'll be a whole new me.
I hope there's a whole lot of new. Well, I don't know if I see a new year as cleaning the slate or clearing the slate or. Mm-hmm. But it's been a rough year. And as we were playing that bump, I love that Steve was playing the guitar along with George Michael right there. I love music. We've mentioned this many times on the show. I don't know music. I can't sing. I don't know when to jump in on a song. I don't.
Me
all
neither.
Of that. But I love music.
Yeah.
And you guys in the overnight shared so many musicians, their stories, their adventures, and music that many people had never heard before. Mm-hmm. And I love what you've brought both to the artists and to listeners over the years. And Steve, you wanted to share a story about a cheesecake and security, one of your own stories.
Before we get to that, for a second,
of course.
George Michael, and I told you a little bit about this in the green room. Johnny and I were down in Florida. It was a year ago. And we saw a wonderful George Michael special that you have to see. It's about 2 hours long. It's a video of a concert that he did over in Paris.
In the Paris Opera House.
And he's not
I think
doing,
it's the only rock show ever done in the Paris Opera House.
But he's not doing his hits. He's doing, there's a big orchestra.
Covers.
And you realize beautiful. How good. What do you know the name of the?
I don't, but I know what you're talking about.
It's
an album you can purchase too.
Yes, yeah.
I haven't
DVD.
Seen the video, but there is an album. They're amazing songs.
You've got to see the video. It is. A lot of people don't realize just how good George Michael was.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
this was a true talent.
I didn't as much. You know, I always enjoyed his music and Faith. Freedom and, you know, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go and his music with Wham. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of bopped to it a little bit. And there were other songs. It was interesting that when he passed away, I just was like, oh, it was just surprising how badly I felt when I learned that. And then I started watching videos of his and I started crying because I hadn't really done that all year with many of the icons that passed away. Mm-hmm. Maybe with Gene Wilder, I thought that was sad. Mm-hmm. You know, different moments, I think, hit you in different ways. But when I went down this path of watching a lot of George Michael videos, absolutely. I was, when they were showing a video of him rehearsing with Queen, he was going to step in for Freddie Mercury and was...
Somebody to Love,
And David Bowie is in the background.
In the background.
In awe.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, he's the only one that could
step
pay
in.
Homage to Freddie Mercury on such an on that occasion.
I think one of the problems with George Michael was because he started with Wham... Too many people took him for granted,
right?
And didn't realize how good his voice was.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many songs that I've watched now. His Unplugged on MTV.
Yeah.
Just you watch video after video, and once you watch one of them, it's really
well. He was so sexy. I mean,
oh my God,
crazy.
Yes. Well, and then there was a video. Which one was it that you said you watched? Was it Freedom?
Freedom. Yeah.
With,
all the,
with all the models.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even in that video except for his jacket. They torch his jacket.
Yeah.
Right. Because he was getting a lot of feet of. Backlash because he was always center stage, mm-hmm. so he did that album to kind of just tell everyone to shove off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't remember him coming out of the closet, and it had to be so hard for him. And it was almost to the point where the ridicule had to have been overwhelming for him too because of his very high profile.
Wasn't that after he was arrested?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was
in
arrested
California,
for
and that kind of forced him
90s.
To come out of the closet.
Yeah, and the sad thing is now there's some speculation, at least over in Great Britain, that. The reason he died was because he felt so poorly about who he was. He had such poor self-esteem that he had ballooned up. I mean, if you see the pictures of him in a restaurant in September, it was just,
sad.
It didn't look anything like him. And that he was so self-conscious
about
that.
But we both said the same thing. If you look at those pictures, and they're online, it's a very pasty, heavy George Michael. He almost looks like, I've been on prednisone, he almost looks like he was on prednisone
steroids,
or something like that.
Yeah.
So who knows what was
going
on.
Some health issues.
And that is the weird thing when someone passes away is some of the stories that come to the surface, his anxiety being one of them, and that he had gained weight.
Depression.
Right, and that he'd also been in he checked himself into a facility in Australia for a while long ago.
Apparently he was into crack and meth.
Right,
those
stories. And then the other stories that also surfaced was how much he gave to charity and asked to be anonymous.
Watching television and a woman is on television talking about she can't afford a surgery and he calls the hospital and he pays for her surgery, but he doesn't want anyone to know.
And we didn't until he passed away. Mm-hmm. People started coming forward with these stories. He would volunteer in homeless shelters, didn't want anyone to know about it, donating money to all kinds of organizations for people with AIDS and children who were suffering, the most vulnerable. And those are really remarkable stories too. And you'll hear about some celebrities now and then. I know that when I was a stand-up comic just starting out, one of the people that I'd heard a lot about who has now been sort of also ridiculed publicly with a lot of different stories, Rosie O'Donnell does that as well. She'll pay for surgeries. That's when she started adopting children and, you know, early on in her career when she started making money. There are people, Sandra Bullock does that as well. Mm-hmm. There are people who, you know, but it sounds as though George Michael really worked very hard to make sure that no one knew that he was supporting so many people in different ways. Yeah. And I'm trying to find the concert that you were talking about in Paris. It was at the Palais Garnier.
Yes.
I'm sure I'm butchering that pronunciation.
It's okay. We agreed.
But that was recorded in 2012 for his live album Symphonica.
Mm-hmm. He looks amazing. And the acoustics in this place were unbelievable. And that was a big deal. There had not been a rock concert or a rock performer.
Your homework assignment is go home and watch that.
I will watch. I wept. My husband was so mad at me the night that he passed. Was it Sunday night that he passed away? I think it had to be Sunday.
Christmas Day. Right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So
we argued in our family about, no, don't believe that. That's one of those fake news stories. We were all just quick to say, it's fake.
Sure.
It's fake. And then we found out it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't post anything until I find out. Yeah, until it's been verified.
But your husband was angry with you for...
Because I was up until he had fallen asleep and I had my iPad and headphones on. And I was watching video after video of George Michael and I posted some of them. I made one joke about how I want your body. What was the really sexy one?
I want your sex.
I want your sex. Mm-hmm. Right? And I, you know, the video comes on and I'm like, huh. Well, now I know why I have so many garter belts, because the beginning of that video is a woman walking through. And I did. I used to collect garter. I just thought there was something alluring about it. And there was something classic about that look. But here it was in this video from the 1980s. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense about my developing years.
And apparently after that song, he refused to ever perform that live. He never did it in concert.
Interesting.
He did not want to be associated with that.
And I forget why.
Because he did not want that to be what he was known for. There was a different person deep inside there that we just never got to know.
I agree. But his videos were gorgeous. They were luscious in a lot of ways. Like that video, as I mentioned, there's a woman sort of, you know, walking out in this beautiful bustier and garter belt. But also the images, there's like the satin sheets. And
very classic.
Very luscious. And the video that you were talking about, Freedom, with all the models in it.
Yeah.
He's not even in that video at all. It's gorgeous. One More Chance?
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous as well. It's all like in shadows and so many things about his videos that were just incredible. Anyway, so I will watch Symphonica.
Good.
At the his concert in Paris. Now you have to wait until after the news in order to tell us, I guess, about your cheesecakes.
But this is a classic cliffhanger. Yeah, we used to do this. We would present something like at midnight, remember? Mm-hmm. And we'd never get around to it. And people would contact us and say, I waited till 5 o'clock and you never told us. And I said, that's the point. You were with us.
You stayed in.
You know who's the best at that? Rachel Maddow does the best teases.
But she comes back with a payoff.
You're going to get so many texts about watching Rachel Maddow now. Yeah.
Well,
I thought you were going to say, you know who does the best of that? We'll tell you right after this. That's right. That's what you should have done.
Touché.
We'll have to find out later. Yes. Why do you think, and having had this show, I know that we have the unique opportunity, the show that you had for, was it 22 years?
27.
Wow. So, but the New Year's Eve show is 22 years. Yeah. So for 27 years in your time slot of, you know, when the lights go out, and for other people, they're on they're working night shifts and they're trying to stay awake. But there is a unique opportunity because we don't have the business and traffic reports.
Yep.
Right.
So we can stretch out and have those conversations. Yep. I think that there's something about that intimacy that is so different than any other radio host has.
Absolutely intimate is the best way to describe it, because imagine you're in bed with people.
Right.
I can't, even to this day, we meet people and they say, oh, I slept with you every night. And I kind of look around to see if someone overhears the,
sure.
My husband hated it when I would sleep with you because I would laugh all night long. You know, people would say these things.
Sure.
And so innocently, and I nod and go, yeah, well, thanks.
But also a lot of people by themselves, for whatever reason, awake at night, they've got problems. And you want to take them someplace else. You want to kind of take their minds off some of those problems.
And they're also open to conversations.
Yes.
We've gotten some complaints, or let's call them comments, about how much I talk about my family, in particular my son Declan. I've had one person say that she talks about her special needs son too much for my tastes. And, you know, usually it comes up as a part of whether I'm going down to Springfield or something that's happened. But it really is, I want it to be normal to people, because the life that I have isn't what people are familiar with. They're frightened by it, and if it makes them angry, there's nothing I can do about that. But there had to be things throughout the years where you're like, really, that's the thing that's going to make you mad? I've had people complain that I laugh too much, and it's hard for them to fall asleep.
Been there, done that.
Why does she laugh? She doesn't need to. You know what?
We'll
laugh.
Happy?
Exactly. We're going to be happy during this break. So there. What are we listening to on this track?
This is a medley I put together. I call it, it's named after our book about Les Paul, A Little More Les. And I wanted to do something that would incorporate some of the songs that Les Paul was known for, but not in the fast way that that a lot of people are used to him. So this incorporates How High the Moon, It's Been a Long, Long Time, and also Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And this is one of the first things that are going to be part of a new album that I'm hopefully going to be releasing in 2017.
This is beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
It's hauntingly beautiful.
Well, thank you.
I love that.
The guy who's accompanying me, his name is Dave Lloyd, and he's playing a thing called, Paul, you'll appreciate this, it's a Chapman stick. Do you know what a Chapman stick is?
I do not.
Basically, it's a 10-string guitar. So he's doing chords and bass lines at the same time. He's the guy with the talent on this thing.
It's the acoustic sounding background?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like a stick. It's an ugly instrument.
Yeah.
It is.
It just looks like a big stick. But we recorded this at a place in Florida, in Lynn Haven, Florida.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating studio. It's called Studio 812. And one of the neat things about it is before it was a recording studio, it was a secret government facility during the Second World War.
That's where they researched submarines. And the guys that worked there actually had aliases in this little town that they lived in. So people thought that they were accountants, and yet they would go into this concrete building and work on the books, when in fact they were researching submarines. It's a really cool place.
When the guy who owns the studio, bought the studio, he shows up, going to do a lot of reconstruction, and he discovers in the wall there's this safe. He calls up the FBI, and they said, oh, yeah, we forgot about that. We need to come and take a look. And he said,
don't touch anything.
He says, can I be here to show you? They said, no, you might not want to be there when we show up.
It's the answers to all of life's answers.
Or there's something
plutonium
or uranium.
Exactly.
They later called him up and said, it's good you weren't there.
Wow. But we'll never know why. Was it radioactive?
But
was it
$1 million?
There are, and you can verify this because you saw it. There are some rooms in this studio where weird mojo goes on. For example, I have a guitar tuner that won't work in the main studio.
But
works
you
in every other room.
You walk outside the door and it works.
And,
clock won't work, but you take it outside the door and it starts ticking.
Yes. So it's some sort of magnetic.
We don't know. You just feel different when you're in there.
All the answers are in that safe, and we're
that's
never
right.
going to know.
We're never going to know.
It's kryptonite. I know it is.
Okay, submarine testing is now a recording studio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And your point is?
The acoustics have to be fantastic.
Know, maybe,
oh, they're wonderful.
Maybe it wasn't even a submarine thing. They just said that.
Yeah.
Like, it was like really where they discovered if there was Bigfoot or something.
And the control board that was used.
Oh, yeah. This is cool. The control board that was used to record what you just heard. Johnny Carson's Tonight Show control board from when he was in New York.
Throughout the 60s, yeah. Oh, wow.
And they still have little markings on the control
little
board.
Little pieces of masking tape that the engineers...
It's such a cool little place
that's
in
awesome.
This out-of-the-way town, yeah. Lynn
Haven,
Florida.
Who had that connection there to, like, oh, give it to the guy that's going on to Florida.
I know.
That's such a strange transition.
Yeah.
I know. We're standing there going, okay, if this wasn't a movie, people would say, that's just stupid. It's just hokey.
I know. What a weird journey for that board.
Yeah.
That's bizarre. I love that.
And then Steve sits in the studio and records and
well, how did you get the hookup with this studio in Florida, the submarine testing facility?
Because we told you about the radio station that we were involved with,
right?
Which is one of the NPR stations. It's for Gulf Coast College.
We're consulting with them,
And one of the guys who he's a real neat guy. He's helping them out too. He also is the guy that owns the recording studio. So one thing led to another, and that's how we wound up recording that.
Yeah, but how did he end up owning the recording studio?
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, he's an interesting guy because not only is he helping the people at the Gulf Coast College, but he has this class where he's kind of teaching kids to do stuff. He bought a 75 Chevy pickup truck.
Okay.
That he has showed the kids how to make a solar-powered pickup truck.
So now
we've seen now they've got these
on campus.
Solar
it's
power.
Their car.
He's a really cool guy.
That's what he tells you, but he's secretly working for the
government. Yeah,
you're probably right.
And he's like, "Oh, that's my alias, by the way." Like,
that's right.
And that's
why
you didn't get to know what's in the safe.
They
wouldn't
buy.
That's like his real identity.
And his name is Tom Hoots.
Tom Hoots with his S or a Z.
Yes.
Hoots.
Sounds made up to me.
Sounds like a hoot and a holler right there.
That's right.
See, because I dream of owning like a repurposed building, whether it's like a church or like an old industrial. Yes, I do.
What do you want to do with it?
I want to make like one big house, like a single, on Northwest Highway in my neighborhood, there are a lot of sort of abandoned industrial buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make it like almost instead of a loft, make that like a big repurposed industrial building for living. You're probably right.
Steve freaks out every time he flips by the tiny house television shows. I hate those people.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's just so creepy to me.
Who wants a tiny house?
That's claustrophobic to me.
Yeah.
And the bed that folds out of the wall and, you know, putting everything under
I think it's so neat.
It's like my apartment.
Is that what does your bed fold out? Do you have a Murphy bed?
I like the Murphy bed idea.
I wish.
Yeah.
I would never make my bed and put it back up. It would just never go back
up
again.
Do you make your bed? Would you?
I don't make my bed every day. Do you make your bed every day?
We never leave the house without the bed being made. That's just.
I
we
never
came to
bed.
Work that the bed wasn't made. We would go back and make the bed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, because here's the thing. There's something great about getting into a made bed.
Yes. And iron sheets. Oh, my gosh.
All that
gosh.
Is good. And you're supposed to change your sheets like every 3 days. Do you change your sheets every 3 days? Okay.
No.
And I feel better then.
And but we don't use a new towel every time we shower.
That's where the opposites attract part of our relationship comes in. Johnny is the one who was the neat. We got to make the bed. I was the one who says,
yes.
Okay, it's the thing you're looking for. It's 3/4 of the way up in this pile over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like having piles. That's where I find stuff.
Piles?
Yeah.
He alphabetizes things according to size.
Yeah.
So it's like stacks of paper.
Wait.
I learned that from my dad, alphabetically according to size.
How can you go alphabetically according to size? That doesn't, I don't
know.
You can't.
But he knows where stuff is.
It's chaos.
That's and so as soon as I start complaining, he goes, well, you needed, and he pulls it out of the bottom of the stack and he hands it to me. And I go, oh,
you know where
dang.
Everything is.
Yes. Exactly. But he doesn't know where socks or underwear. Or four.
Because she moves.
He
things.
Does not know where silverware is in our house.
How often does
she
move?
Stands in the kitchen. And he goes, "Honey,
she will
where's
say,
the silverware?
Will you go get a plate of blah blah blah, and I need a fork." And she moves this. I know
literally.
She moves it.
How many different places are there? They put forks.
I don't have that kind of time to stand around and change the silverware. I've been telling him that for 33 years.
But how
years.
Many times have you come out in the kitchen? Yes, they're arguing on the radio. How many times have you come out in the kitchen and I showed you the drawer and you said, "Oh, it's not there." Well,
How many times? Not enough for it to be.
Where are my socks? Where your socks always are. No, they're not. They weren't there yesterday. You move them. I know. I have so much time. I move the silverware
and the socks
and underwear every day to make it interesting.
It keeps life
exciting.
So I wind
up putting instead of a sock, I wind up putting a fork in my shoe.
That's because I want you to need me. So I move your socks and underwear around.
Well, it works.
That's the key to a successful marriage.
It is. When my husband can't find something, I'll find it right away. I'm like, did you even look for it?
Oh, yes.
That's a-
yes. But I don't even say it now. I just give him the look.
Yeah.
He goes, I know. I looked for it.
Yeah. And now we just say, I go to Griffin. What does mommy say? Did you even look for it?
But
yes.
Again, I learned this from my dad. After you find it,
yes.
You need to look one more place.
We always look one more place. So it's never in the last place you looked.
It's one more place.
You got to try that one on him too.
Oh,
because you go, wait, and you look under the table and you go, what are you doing? I want to look one more place. So it wasn't in the last place I looked.
I have a question. Do you have someone come to clean the house ever? Do you ever have like any housekeeping?
I think 'cause... 1 year you gave me a Christmas gift, a maid service.
Yeah. And that didn't go well?
It didn't go well.
Yeah.
No.
Because I'm thinking about doing that.
I killed myself cleaning before they got there.
That's the thing.
Which was stupid.
And we wound up having to go in after the maids.
Yeah.
And then they broke my tchotchkes, which made me mad.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because I have a lot of tchotchkes.
Oh, no. See, we had someone come in one time to clean, and I had broken the glass in one of the picture frames of Griffin when he was born.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just the picture with no glass on it, and she sprayed it.
Oh,
it
was,
and, you just see this smear of the ink on the
picture.
There's
some really good. Now, there are people working right now cleaning, and I was a cleaning woman working the midnight shift. So let me tell you, folks, you do good work. That's hard, lonely work.
Right.
We're just saying that they're not all good, just like all radio people are not good.
And that was an honest mistake, too.
Explain to the class how you wound up finding out what kind of friends you had when you were a cleaning woman after a disastrous thing that happened.
Oh, I was cleaning the
submarine place?
No, the president of the company's office. It was great because I was working with a crew of Polish women who couldn't speak English, and they were wonderful because we spent our lunches learning English. I would teach them English. It was great fun because I always wanted to be a teacher.
Right.
So I really took this seriously. I even rolled in a blackboard into the cafeteria.
Come
to
on.
Make, yeah. Rolled in a blackboard.
Spectacular.
And, had a pointer, and I'm like, hey, apple, you've got an apple. Okay.
She's like diagramming sentences.
I loved it. It was great. So they let me have the president's office because it was the easy office. It was white carpeting, white sofa, and
my heart just started hurting just a little bit. Go ahead.
Vacuuming, and the hose came out of the vacuum bag and went
all
over.
Oh, no.
You could write your name and the dust on the top of his glass desk and just white walls, everything covered.
Oh, no.
And they all came in and kicked in. And they were speaking Polish, so Lord knows what they were saying about me. But they helped me clean up the place.
just cursing you under
stupid
their breath.
Blonde, no. But she's teaching us how to speak English.
So. I'm sure that they all had a situation where they'd hope somebody would be there to back them up too. Oh,
I married a sitcom.
I'll teach you the alphabet for pierogies.
Now I'm hungry.
I know, me too.
More after this on 720 WGN. Don't forget to tune in this Saturday night. Steve and Johnny's Cheap Date: Life After Dark New Year's Eve Extravaganza. Am I saying it with the right? Is it? It's Cheap Date. Is it all one sentence?
Cheap Date: Life After Dark. Mm-hmm. Because that was our thing.
New Year's Eve extravaganza. Mm-hmm.
No cover charge. No dress code.
No cover charge. And you're going to be covering the midnights.
So if you fall asleep at midnight, it's going to be midnight somewhere.
At 11 o'clock, we'll have a countdown from New York. Then Chicago, the countdown with the thousands of people out on Michigan Avenue. And then something that we just added, and it's kind of cool. We're going to have, at 1 o'clock, we'll have the New Year's Eve Whiskey Row boot drop countdown from Prescott, Arizona.
That's fantastic.
So a big old boot drops out of the sky.
When we come back, I'm going to try to remember why I know Prescott, Arizona. I feel like there's something important.
I think they say Prescott.
That's why. Prescott. Because they probably corrected me. That's why it seems important to me. Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Paul's here, too. We'll talk to him later. I will be the one who loves you till the end of time. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, in the Allstate Showcase studio. But for 27 years, Steve and Johnny had this. After Milt Rosenberg, they were telling me some stories off the air and on the air about hosting this show. Paul Farvar joins us in studio. You're not as familiar with the legacy of WGN Radio. Did you not listen to talk radio growing up? Because this is all I had in my background.
What was wrong with you, Paul?
Yeah, really?
So much. I don't know how much time we have. But no, I listened to a different radio station. I didn't listen to talk radio. I just listened to music.
Now
all I listen to is talk radio. It's kind of funny. People come to my car and they're like, what are you doing?
Well, the thing is unusual for a 26-year-old guy to be listening
right,
to talk radio.
Right, that's what
radio.
They say.
Yeah.
I'm getting younger.
You're getting much younger.
Persian Benjamin Mullins. I like it.
I do think there's a resurgence of talk radio now.
Absolutely.
There was a study that more people are listening to talk radio than ever before. And I wonder if that's partly because there's people are trying to find a place to have a conversation, because on Facebook it's like more like an argument. And you, by the way, the pictures that you post are lovely, Johnny. So many of the things. And I know I got to follow your travels. I know that you were there were some storms that you got caught through going down to Florida.
I enjoy taking pictures. So that's the beauty of Facebook for me, is I have an audience to share my pictures with.
I mostly post photos now rather than trying to start a conversation because
that's what I do too. It's safer and cathartic and
I can't get into it with people anymore.
I can't either.
And by the way, if people are wondering when they post things, like even when I posted just 2 nights ago, the George Michael comment about now I know why I have so many garter belts. Yeah. Someone wrote, "Must be a slow news day if we need to know that." You know what? You don't have to be here.
Yeah.
You can delete.
Move on.
Yep. I did, and
great about Facebook.
Exactly, but with talk radio, with having the conversation again, please join us anytime. 312-981-7200. I think that people are in search of that. A little bit right now of just listening to each other, I hope, because it's been 2 years of not listening to each other, just sort of talking at each other.
Yeah.
And you guys always did a remarkable and lovely job of sharing so much, not just with your own stories, but again, like I mentioned, musicians, or if it was talking about cars or tech, photography, so many different things,
We were the first ones to do magic on the radio.
Yeah.
As you should be.
You know, people are like, how do you do magic?
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is, in the middle of the night,
it actually worked.
You can get people to play along with you and you can do magic.
Hey, one of the biggest stars in radio was a ventriloquist. So, I mean, come on.
But the punchline is, look, the nickel is gone. And then you have to just say, by the way, everybody, the nickel is gone.
Paul, let me tell you, when you have people call in and they want to be a part of it, and next thing you know, they start screaming, my watch is working. My watch hasn't worked in 30 years. Oh, my. And you can tell they're legitimately freaking out because my watch is working.
Because of that subterranean room the room where the watch didn't work. It all goes back to that safe.
But it's really kind of cool, though, when things like that happen.
But the craziest that I ever had. Do you remember the name Blackstone?
Yes.
The fabulous.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he was the classic with the little black goatee and the tuxedo and the big voice.
He was coming to Chicago. So I had him on 2 weeks in a row. This was back when Johnny and I were over on WIND. First week, another magician is in the studio. He has that guy write down something. The guy puts it in an envelope, gives it to me.
Sealed.
I hold it, sealed it. I hold it till the next week.
Now, this is weird.
When Blackstone is on with us again for his appearance, the Chicago Tribune comes in.
3 o'clock in the morning.
3 o'clock in the morning. What's the headline in the Tribune? Open up the envelope.
That was it.
No.
Yes.
Come on.
And that envelope did not leave me at all.
Okay, that's creepy. Wow.
I have no idea to this day how that worked.
We need to find that FBI guy, that safe key, because all our answers are there. I don't know why you guys are laughing. I think we can figure this all out.
All in the
safe. And it's going to explain everything from 2016.
Well, the cool thing about that experience was nobody questioned it. They were just
like,
right.
The headline was in the envelope.
But it was legit.
And the funny thing is, I envision people the next morning telling their friends that they were up in the middle of the night, and their friends are looking at them like, okay, when you took your medication and went back to bed, right? you know, like, really? You believe this stuff? But at night, you can play those kinds of wonderful games because people are... they're willing to go along with it.
Did you ever have, because once in a while we've had psychics on the air, and that really draws in a lot of people too in a similar way.
Tarot cards too.
We've had tarot cards and things like that. I think that there's something people are looking for, and that's part of the idea of talk radio. Did you ever have psychics on?
Yeah, we did. In fact,
the amazing
we got time for another weird true story.
Yeah, I'll let you tell this one. We still have to do cheesecakes and scary.
The amazing Elizabeth and her husband,
I forget
his name. Anyhow.
But she was the amazing one.
She was a psychic.
And the other guy.
Mike Todd. That's Elizabeth. Oh, different.
And they had worked together for years. Damon Reinbold.
Yes.
That was his name. Okay. They were married, worked together for years, got divorced. She's living in Nashville. He's up in Wisconsin. He has a stroke. Family calls her.
Goes into a coma.
He's probably not going to survive. She comes up from Nashville.
Because they have children together, so she wants to come and be there with the children with her ex.
She's in the hospital room with him, and the doctors are saying, you know, you really better say your goodbyes because he's not going to make it. She's by herself, and she thought, I'm going to try something. Because part of their act was hypnosis. She starts talking to him as if she was going to bring him out of a hypnotic trance.
He came out of his coma.
He did.
He came
absolutely
out of the
true
coma.
Story.
That's wild.
He was on our show after that. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a man that they had already said last rites. Where is he going to be buried? The whole thing. He was on our show and wept like a baby when he told the story of.
That's wild.
And my question was, did you want to come back? Because I'm serious. I'm thinking
that's fair. Sure.
You know, maybe he had resigned himself that this was a much better place, that the white light was much better. And then she's nagging him to come back. And he came back.
Fine. Did he say he wanted to come back?
He wanted to come back, that he had a lot more to do, a lot more work to do.
Off radio, he's like, to be honest.
That's right.
The light was pretty cool.
I'll segue
to a blatant plug. Speaking of that kind of thing, one of the guests we're going to have Saturday night is Sidney Friedman.
Sidney Friedman?
The name sounds familiar.
He's the musical mentalist. Yes, he's going to do some predictions for 2017.
There you go.
But
he
will also, I believe he's going to grab one of the guitars we have. You think of a song, he'll start playing the song you're thinking of.
Oh, come on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
So if you think of a listener can call in, think of a song, and he will start
playing it.
Oh, I've got to hear that.
He's got a show at Davenport's, so he rings in the new year at midnight, then he's going to jump in his car, run over here, and then hang out with us for a couple of hours.
And everyone can listen on Saturday night, but also you can watch the live stream. We've got to watch that live.
And remember, it starts at 10.
Starts at 10 o'clock on Saturday night.
So we can get everybody warmed up. And
right, which means that everyone that's at the Tivoli at 6 o'clock, the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove to see the
beautiful theater,
the New Year's Eve
show
for people who can't stay up till midnight. Me, Steve Cochran, and Larry Reeb will be performing. And then I'll be calling in, I think, at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm leaving for Disney World the next day with my family.
Good.
Really?
Yes.
You ever been there?
We went last year.
You had a great time.
We had a fantastic, which is why we're going back.
Good.
And this time I'm going to record the reason that we're going, which are the giggles that come from my son Declan. And that's really, that's one of the big reasons.
Boy.
Well, that we also want to see the Hall of Presidents this year as opposed to ever again.
Understood.
Yes.
It's just going to be too weird.
I didn't know they had a Hall of Presidents.
They do have a Hall of Presidents. They're all animatronic presidents, and it's about to get weird. We have on the line with us Gene, who wants to say something. Hey, Gene, how are you doing?
Hey, Joni, this is Gene. I'm calling you from Fort Worth, Texas. I'm listening to you on the internet radio. And I, back in the 70s, I think you used to be on radio station WAUR in Aurora.
I did, yeah.
Okay,
that's where I started.
That was before you were married to Steve, right?
Oh, yes. I was just a baby disc jockey then.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, but I think I had you recorded. I used to tape a lot of radio stations at that time.
You recorded me?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any of Johnny's old air check? I have been trying like crazy to find old air checks of Johnny. Do you have any?
I may have it. I have to check, but I'm kind of currently boxed up. I'm getting ready to sell my condo down here in Fort Worth and move back to the Rockford area.
Oh, good.
And that's where I picked up when I was living in Belvedere at the time, way back when.
Right.
But actually, listening to you guys, I'm enjoying your everybody over there at the station.
Thank you.
Patty and
thank
I listen
you.
To Patty a lot. That she's a ball of fire.
Amen. Yeah,
ball of fire.
But I like that.
Steve, when you played that guitar piece, do you remember Peter Drake?
Oh, sure. Peter Drake and his talking guitar.
And his talking steel guitar.
Yeah.
I put it on there while I was waiting for you before I called, and I didn't think I'd get it. And when I put it in the internet, it came back with nothing. I'm thinking, I finally found something Wikipedia didn't know about. And I put it in a second time, and sure enough, it kicked back to what a YouTube thing. Well, I haven't played it yet. It's sitting there on my screen.
Yeah, he had a hit record. The song was his instrumental version of I'm Sorry and the Anita Kerr Singers backed him. It was recorded down in Nashville.
Right. He was in Nashville, right?
He doesn't know what he ate for dinner yesterday.
He knew about Peter Drake.
Oh, absolutely. It was terrific.
But the other thing you were talking about the talking, where Patty was saying that a lot of people listen to talk radio right now, I think a byproduct of people with iPhones and such is everybody's texting right now. You're not really in conversation anymore.
That's true, right.
And so Patty's radio station and your radio stations, when you two are on, I listen to you, and I'm actually talking to you guys while I'm not calling you up all the time like I am right now. But I enjoy the repartee that goes on, and I get a kick out of you guys like, you were in bed with me, but not, I'm not in bed. like Johnny Carson used to say, I'm in, how many millions of people bed at nighttime, and he's getting away with something that nobody else can get away with.
That's right.
Right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking me way back.
God. Yeah, no kidding. And if you find those air checks,
send them to me, not to Steve.
No, send them to me.
Me.
To me.
I'll get a hold of Steve, and I'll see if I can find it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, please do.
You'll be associated with WGN for quite a while, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much, G. And you know what? It's our pleasure to spend the night with you anytime. We were actually just talking about having the opportunity to meet some of our fans. And on the air right now, we have Peaches. Hey, Peachy, how you doing? Hey, Peachy.
Hey, Peaches, how are you?
Peachy. So I was talking about you off the air. How old were you when you first called us?
That was 97. I was born in 71. I'm now 45. Mm-hmm. I got to say, 30.
No, you were younger than that. You were younger than that. Yeah, you were a lot younger than that.
Yeah, you're the retired paper packer.
That's right.
And while you were packing papers, you were still working at Jewel. You were juggling a whole lot of things.
I had three jobs at one time. Yeah, I went from midnight to about 8 p.m.
Can you believe that, Patty? Midnight to 8 p.m.
Wow.
And so those would be the nights when I was complaining because I was tired. To go, second thought, I'm not so tired anymore. Thank you for calling, Susan. I feel great.
Those are some long hours.
Yeah. So how's my favorite accordion?
Now, see, you got ugly on me. Why did you go
Look, you. I love... by Susan,
I couldn't resist that one. I
know. You're just being mean.
I love the story about how your parents thought you wanted this accordion because an accordion salesman came to your door and talked to you.
That's after he accosted me on a city street, and I gave him our home address and said, sure, come to our house.
That was a different time of life, my friend.
It was a very different time. But you know what? It was old town in the 60s. What was I thinking?
I know. Now,
I'm going to put Steve on the spot now. Uh-oh.
Please do. Go right ahead.
Yes. It's his turn.
How's my favorite leprechaun?
Sure, and she's a wondrous thing.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Hold on. I think that Craig and Steve should go at their Irish accents. Let's see. Let's have dueling Irish accents.
Oh, what are you talking about, you good kids there? I don't know what you're saying.
I don't understand the whole thing.
The quality of this conversation has suddenly improved.
Can I tell his is way better. By the way, I'm just going to say, Steve is much better.
No, well, he's older. He's had a lot more years to practice
the conversation
that.
Turns ugly. Oh,
can I you guys gave me a CD, and it was with the song Sneaky Snake.
Sneaky Snake. That's Sneaky right. Snake. Yes, because we used to play Sneaky Snake. Mm-hmm. And she liked that.
My brother Michael is coming over tomorrow night. So you want to take a wild guess what we're going to play together?
You're going to play Sneaky Snake.
I love
that's
that.
That's sweet.
Oh, well. Over and over and over. Doing Jingle Bells. My mother's going to have a headache.
Oh, Susan, thank you for calling. And Happy New Year.
It's always
happy
good to hear from you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan. What was the story you wanted to
quick
tell about?
Quick accent story.
Please.
So we're in London, and Steve is thrown off a double-decker bus.
Wait. And he was thrown off
a bus. Yeah,
on purpose?
Literally.
Okay. I probably need to pause here and explain what happened.
I mean, like, it took a hard left and you're like,
oh,
not
Patty, yes, he was thrown off a bus.
We're on a double-decker bus. It's our second day in London. First time to London.
Yes.
Johnny gets off the bus.
In the middle of Piccadilly Circus.
Okay.
And she says to me,
I said, jump, honey, jump. Those were my last words.
The driver didn't know there was still someone on the bus. He floors it.
And he's got
his hand. I'm thrown down, and I now have 3 screws in my hip, and I had a broken elbow.
No! So he's thrown down in the middle on a Sunday afternoon. Traffic is now coming at us, like 5 lanes of traffic. I'm standing there blocking traffic. He's crawling on his hands and knees. A bank guard runs out and stops traffic with me so that he can crawl across the street. And we get to the curb, and an ambulance comes. And the first question they ask you is, did you step out in traffic? Because I guess that happens a lot.
You Americans.
Yeah. But they were very, very nice to us.
To your left.
Yeah, exactly.
To your right.
He said, no, he was thrown off a bus. And the bank guard said, I saw it. He was stepping off the bus. And it was his last run. And he was going to go back to the bus depot and park. And so he gunned it and threw him down. And anyway, Steve has to have surgery that next day, Monday.
In London.
And everybody says, oh, well, it was for free. No, they told me we'd have $5,000. I had to get $5,000 Sunday night so that they would do surgery on Monday. Now, they wouldn't keep the $5,000. They wanted it assurance.
Like
that
a bond?
If the insurance didn't pay, that they would have that $5,000. So I called back. Management said, we'll call. We'll take care of everything. We'll get the $5,000. Wonderful management at that time. And anyway, Steve goes in.
What about the
surgery.
Bus driver? Why isn't the bus driver putting down the $5,000?
Oh, they told me we don't sue like that in this country.
Yeah. How dare they?
Wow. Yeah. Really? Paul's got a business card to give you from his law firm.
So he goes into surgery, and we're in a hospital that was built in the 1400s. I'm serious.
An old stable.
Sure.
1485. The nurses wear blue denim and black hose. And Sally Field wings,
the whole flying nun deal.
The big habits. Mother Superior, and when she'd come in, I'm not kidding, she turned sideways to come in the door because her wings were so big.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting. He comes out of surgery. They roll him into the ward. You're in a ward like World War One, where it's just beds lined up.
You don't have individual rooms.
It's beds lined up.
Oh, God.
Now, this is after
the English patient.
40. Like the Ernest Hemingway book.
They have 20 on either side, but they put him at the end. So when you walk in, you see the American at the very end, and these 20 people on either side, men and women, all ages, right? And there he is, and he's still under. And I walk in, I've got his toilet paper and his, because you have to buy your own toilet paper and your own soap, and you have to bring your own washcloths and towels. Wow. I've got this little bag of all these groceries for him, and I sit down next to him, and he's coming out of anesthesia, and he decides that he will speak in an English accent.
Because
did you decide?
There was a woman who wanted her tea.
An elderly
and she had
lady.
This really exaggerated
so?
English accent. So I'm still stoned and coming out. And I start talking like this.
And I'm going, and I've got a pillow now. I'm ready to put a pillow over his face.
You're like, I did not marry Julia Child. What is this?
And
I'm going, nonsense.
And now it gets really quiet in there because now the American is making fun of us.
Yeah, I became the ugly American.
And he gets louder. He wants his tea.
And I didn't know. I would like some tea. Thank you very much.
Tea. I want my bloody tea. And I'm going, oh, please, shut up.
He's doing a Monty Python impression. What?
Yes.
Oh, no.
And she's like sitting up, looking around and
Oh, no.
Well, they eventually came to love him because he stayed up all night and didn't sleep. And so they got to know him. And, because he was, I mean, we were working this shift.
Exactly. You were overnighters.
Yeah, we were overnighters. And so because of that, they would have us on the radio during the day and have us on Bob Collins' show every morning. What's the latest? What'd you have to eat? You know, all the Americans that are locked in a 1400 hospital in England.
Things are going fine until the BBC shows up
and says,
we are about to be arrested because we have been broadcasting back to America without permission from the BBC.
I don't understand.
So I called the radio station.
Wait, you get thrown off a bus and you nearly get prosecuted for broadcasting.
Yeah.
They said, cease and desist, or we will have our attorneys talk to you. And I'm thinking, well, bring them on. I need to talk to an attorney. Yeah.
So the next morning, when we're on the air with Bob Collins,
saying
we tell him
it.
What's going on.
Right.
The
embassy,
the British embassy
is listening
to Bob Collins. The head of the British embassy here contacts the BBC and says, do you realize how much good positive publicity they've been giving you in
you
the hospital?
You fools.
Exactly.
Next thing we know,
there's the TV crew.
Count your blessings.
They got the TV crew
comes
in there.
They want to interview us and they want to video us while we're doing the phone call back to the.
They've got Klieg lights and they pushed everybody's bed to the side.
Oh no!
Some people get over there.
They have you like wearing shirts like promoting different things like come to the tower.
So we said, wow, tourism. That changed quickly. You know, 24 hours, boom, now we're rock stars.
Oh, my
and
God.
I know you have to break, but can I quickly give you the...
I love when guests are letting me know that I know we're going... You, of course you can.
Okay, this is the rest of the story.
Uh-huh.
So I'm there, and I have to recover. It's almost 2 weeks. The day before we're going to be let out, the doctor says, you really haven't had a chance to see anything. You know, so why don't you... At that point, I was on crutches, and I could get around a little bit.
And not eager to get on another double-decker bus, I'm guessing.
Gosh, no. I interviewed cabbies, you know, the big black cabs. I interviewed them to find the right cabbie who would be sympathetic to our needs if we went on a tour of Great Britain and downtown London and found a perfect, I mean, he practically wept. He goes, I'll take you. I'll be so happy to take you.
And because all I'm going to be doing is going from my room to the cab.
Sure.
I have this basically
hospital gown. Open down the back.
Nice.
And TEDS, which are basically...
The white support hose that come up over your knee.
Because they help the circulation.
No shoes.
So that's how I'm dressed.
Okay.
In the wheelchair, go down, get in the cab. He takes us around.
Crutches.
Crutches. After about an hour of seeing things in the cab, I swear, in the same block where I had the accident, afternoon rush hour, Friday, the cab breaks down.
It overheats, and smoke is coming out of the hood of the cab.
Oh,
and he's literally, now big tears are streaming down this guy's face. I'm so sorry. I said, you don't understand. This is where it all happened.
He then looks.
It's traumatizing all over again.
He sees across the street, across all of these lanes of traffic, is a friend of his. He runs across, talks to the guy, comes back to us, says,
I'll take you.
He'll take you, but you have to cross all these lanes of traffic, dressed as I am dressed.
Oh, no.
With no shoes on.
Yeah.
And
support hose, white support hose, and boxer shorts with this back in. And I'm trying to hold the back of the gown closed, and we're hopping in traffic, right?
So while we're doing
this. Because he's non-weight-bearing. He can't put his foot down.
Right.
So
because of the screws in your hip.
Right.
Ugh. Right. Somebody who must have thought I was a local freak or something, some tourist comes up and says, so where's Madame Tussauds Museum? And I said, okay, it's right down there. I don't know if they found it.
Give me that damn crutch. I'm just going to hurt somebody.
Of all the people.
We get into the cabbie's cab, and he says, I hate to tell you this, but we're going on holiday tomorrow, and I need to go to the country to pick up our airline tickets. So now we've been kidnapped.
So you're going to have to if you ride with me to the country, then I'll take you back to the hospital.
So we go out to the country. Now the hospital's put out an APB.
Oh, no.
Americans have been kidnapped.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Seriously, when we got back to the hospital 9 o'clock that night, people whose shifts had ended hours before, they're waiting there. They're like wringing their hands. They've got their rosaries. They're all crying. Mother Superior is there. They're greeting us. They're hugging
us. Plus, they know you're high profile. You've been on BBC. You're broadcasting to WGN.
And we've lost them.
Oh, no.
This is like the intro to a movie from the 70s,
you know, nobody would believe it.
It's like Cannonball Run 2, I think, right?
Well, then,
is this how it starts?
The last thing that happened the day, excuse me. The day that we're leaving, we're going out of the hospital, and one of the people who had been in one of the other beds comes rushing up to us with a bag.
Oh, no.
Yes.
He had a friend of his early that morning.
It was, stand in line.
It was the Queen's, I forget what birthday
90th
it was.
90th birthday.
He brought us a present of commemorative stamps, first day of issue
so
on the Queen's birthday.
So he had this man stand in line at the post office all night long.
For
so
you.
That he could, yes.
Yeah.
And then you use those stamps to, file a lawsuit.
I licked all of them, yes.
Did you get a chance to enjoy England at all?
No.
You've never gone back?
No.
Was that your one and only trip ever?
That was it?
That was it.
I wonder why they didn't go back.
Really?
So weird.
You know, we see the red double-decker bus that drives around here and
I still get the shakes.
Oh, yeah.
He does. He's like, oh.
You should at least go to Ireland.
Oh, and don't you love...
At least go, like, England adjacent.
Just to piss them off.
That's right. Just get off a plane.
Show London.
Start talking in brogue, you know.
That is crazy.
But if we go again, you're coming with us. We need a lawyer with us at all times.
I'd love to find that guy.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to pass the bar in England. That's tort reform. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me are the hosts that kept you entertained, kept you company for 27 years. Steve and Johnny are in studio with me. And also joining us, you have the also tonight, Paul Farvar.
I'll take that.
Fresh off the stage at the Rosemont Zanies tonight. Did you host the 10 for 10 show?
I did.
And Hannah Stanley performed tonight.
She did.
Yeah. Hannah Stanley. She's been doing a great job doing stand-up comedy. I haven't had the chance to see her, but I know she's been very excited about doing it. It's not easy to just jump into those shoes of doing stand-up comedy. We're also listening to music from George Michael tonight. It's been a weird year, and I have to guess if Steve and Johnny were on the air and every time we lost an artist, you'd be having this conversation about the work that somebody did.
Sure.
I mean... Is it strange that that there are so many people that are cynical about the passing of somebody? I mean, I don't know why they care that we care. Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes them angry that we care.
I got angry at someone on Facebook, and I was glad you talked about this because I was really perturbed at the person that I thought I knew who said, well, you know, if you can mourn a celebrity dying, then you are truly blessed. And I thought,
okay.
Oh, yeah. And the piece that you read earlier just...
By Patricia Nelson.
It absolutely hit home with me because, yes, these people, I don't know them. They don't know me. But what they did creatively helped me become who I am today.
I agree.
Helped me through the highs and lows of my life. And if you didn't ever experience it with these people, I feel sorry for you.
And they wouldn't have achieved the popularity that they have achieved if they weren't on some level a part of your life. If
right.
you didn't impact yeah. them, if you didn't feel something from what they were doing.
Well, and when you, whether it's an actor on the screen or you're reading someone's words or listening to their music, it does. I mean, there's a reason why for centuries we have been drawn to art, whether and painters and sculptors. There's a reason why there's a reason why the Bible touches people in so many different ways. As much as people, you know, read it as the word of God, there's also been a lot of poetry that touches people. So there's a reason why so much of this is painful to us.
A friend posted something that I laughed at first and then I realized you're right. She said, if Mondays can suck because the copy machine jams, then a year can suck if all my favorite people die.
Yeah.
So, you know, leave it alone.
Right. And that's been another thing is that people are talking about. My joke was, hey, 2016, don't wake me up before you go. Just go.
Yeah.
It has been strange. You know, David Bowie, Prince, Gene Wilder, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
It's funny because and by funny, I mean odd. It feels odd. I was the most struck by George Michael, and I really couldn't tell you why. Mm-hmm. I was very sad at the passing of Alan Rickman and Gene.
I was Gene Wilder Gene really Wilder. Saddened me, and yes. I found out that I was really saddened by Gene Wilder's passing because his present wife was being overlooked, and everybody was remembering.
Yeah.
His life, and I thought, wow, that would hurt.
That would
really break my heart.
I agree because, again, you know what we remember in the loss of somebody is really someone's personal loss, someone that they wake up with every single day, that they are there for, that they have ridden the highs and lows with. And I agree, his wife was, tragically sort of sidestep. But again, for me, when he passed away, I also did think of Gilla Radner and their tragic love story as well. But I also didn't post anything I don't think about except for, you know, a couple maybe pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But what people were posting when you in reference to that was now Gilda
together.
And Gene are together.
Yeah.
That was the weird.
And I was doing the wife thing. I was going, Damn you. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry. I liked her, but hey,
Strong message to follow. 25 years.
Well, you know? Yeah.
And then it leads into weird conversations about who do you have a relationship with in heaven? If you get back with your ex.
How do we do this, guys? Yeah.
It does lead that sort of like, so if I lose.
First come, first serve. I don't know.
No.
How does it work? What's the rules?
Or maybe that's why they call it heaven.
Maybe that's why they call it heaven. There's no rules. Yeah. There are no rules. All bets
are
off.
From cloud to cloud.
Exactly. It's, I don't know.
It sounds much better than this marriage thing that people keep talking about.
Yes, Paul is a little bit of a. Well, how would you describe your relationship? Because you're not looking to get married. You're looking to have
relationships.
Yes, your relationships.
Their lack of.
My lack of.
What romance means to you? It's having companionship, but not necessarily.
Well, that makes him sound like he's 90. He needs somebody to go to McDonald's with.
What is this word you speak of? Romance? Okay.
Romance. I mean. Because Paul hosts a podcast called Singles Only, and I would say you have a rather cynical take on romance.
I don't think it's cynical.
And relationships.
I think it's just realistic. But
you're young yet.
I'm young.
You're 24 20, now. What are you?
24 now at this point? Yeah.
When we walked in, he was 36.
I know. Which was odd as well.
I know.
Which is accurate.
Did you change that on Facebook yet?
I'm going to. I gotta figure out how to do that.
I'll show you.
I don't know. I think that marriage is an outdated institution, but it's not. It's for some people it works.
See what I mean by cynical? A little bit.
It's not cynical.
Well, why do you think it's an outdated institution?
I think this brings up a good point. This is now what happens in this situation with Gene Wilder. Now we are.
That's your reason for not getting married? Is that you don't want to have to worry about the afterlife?
It's one of the seven different arguments that I can now add to the puzzle.
Like the seven sins.
Yes.
If it's till death do you part, then what happens at death? I mean, now we have two different people
heavy.
That are. Yeah, that's
we
why.
We didn't do the death do you part in our vows. So
did you? You did not?
No.
Did you have them amended?
We did the forever and ever amen.
Lutheran church?
If it's only for 7 years, I think it's a great thing.
It's like a cat, you know. Yeah.
7 years.
This life. That's how people renew their vows.
Well, because when marriage was created, there was a lower lifespan, so it was like, oh yeah, till death do us part. I mean, it's
right around the corner. Sure.
Right. So I think it's different. But now, like, it's a great transition now, knowing what's going to happen with Gene Wilder. Now he's going to, when his present wife.
I'm depressed. I'm really in a funk now.
I'm trying to remember if I had till death do you part in our vows. Because Griffin hates when Steve and I make the joke, no one gets out of this marriage alive.
Oh.
He really doesn't enjoy that.
You know what? You believe in reincarnation, don't you?
I like the idea of reincarnation.
Because your boy is 103.
Oh, and Griffin really is. Yeah. I agree.
He's a sage, you know?
He is a, he has, and he's so funny too. Like he's so political right now and he's trying to stake out that territory. So it's going to be an interesting couple.
Our next cocktail party, can I invite him?
Absolutely.
The heck with you and your husband.
I agree.
I want him at the house.
He's very quiet though for the most part when we're around a lot of
he's thinking.
He is. He's observing and listening. We've started doing a brunch once a month at my favorite restaurant at Knife and Tine. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a government round table. We're kind of talking about what's next and what does it look like? You know, some of the things that we talk about on this show, but in a little more of a open format. I've invited you to brunch
with mimosas.
No, have not I not? Yet.
Oh, never mind.
Huh, that's it's
I need a bigger table.
Get a date
didn't
if
I invite?
To be
let
one
me go through
things.
My text. I could have sworn I did invite you to Knife and Tine for.
But
for
he
brunch.
Couldn't find a date.
I didn't want to be the odd person.
It's not a date situation.
Oh well, I know.
All right then, you're invited to brunch as well.
Thank you.
Was Carrie Fisher ever married?
She was never invited to my brunch.
She was married to Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Is that? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Forgot about that.
I know.
So now what happens with Paul Simon and Edie Brickell?
Well, if you get divorced, it's different. It's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But it said death.
Because I'm looking at Steve. Like, wait a minute.
We don't know what their vows were.
All right, we're gonna settle all these off the earth. You know that, baby, I'm your man. You bet. If you're gonna do it right, like do it with me. You're listening Pretty Late. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Joining me, Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve. I just love it. That's in your song, in your intro music, that it's Steve and Johnny, Johnny and Steve. And we've talked a little bit before about how you decided whose name would be first.
Mm-hmm. Age before beauty.
And that works.
Ooh, the conversation is turning.
Wait a minute.
What remember, there's one Christmas present you don't have yet.
Yeah, you're right.
What?
Yeah.
There's a Christmas present being dangled in...
Because you want, you know, the 12th there's one day of Christmas.
It wouldn't sort of arrive until... I think it's the 6th
the epiphany.
Of January it's arriving.
Or when it went on sale? Is that the...
No.
No.
I'm just teasing.
It was highly sought after, I'm told. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. Now I want to
know. Do you
know.
Celebrate the 12 days of Christmas?
We are this year because we got a little bit thrown off. Also, Paul Farvar joins us in studio. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a rough weekend. Declan got really sick on Christmas Eve, violently so. So it threw us off and I felt... It was hard to make sure that, one, he was safe and healthy, because my son doesn't know that when you start to feel nauseous, you should go and go to the bathroom and take care of that. He'll just stand there. Mm-hmm. And so he also, when he sleeps, I have to stay awake because he did start choking on it in the middle of the night. So that I was awake from till 10:30 in the morning, because I also wanted to make sure that Griffin had his Christmas. So I stayed awake until we opened presents from Santa and we did the breakfast and church and everything. And at 10:30 a.m. I went to bed for a while. And for the first time for Christmas, I had agreed earlier in the week to let Steve go ahead and buy pre-made food at Mariano's. And it ended up being a lifesaver because there was no way I was going to be able to make a whole meal. So this year we are extending the celebration. We're watching. We watched Scrooge tonight and listen to Christmas music. Griffin had never seen the Bill Murray movie. So you celebrate the 12 days of Christmas every year?
Well, sometimes it's 22 days.
Well, go for it.
Sometimes it's Valentine's Day. We take down the
there
tree.
There have been years when our tree didn't come down till April.
What?
Shh.
Well, we were very excited when we turned on our Christmas lights that were around the top of our room, because we had never taken them down since last year.
Yeah,
so we just flicked the switch and boom, they were done. It was exciting.
Like
it was
a little elf came in there and decorated for you.
I know, but they have to come down this year because some of them are not working.
So. Now, after Paul's comment about marriage, I have to ask you, Santa Claus, where do you stand on...
Well, that's a whole other issue. And these are all things that can that shed light.
Oh, he buys into Santa Claus, but
marriage. I don't, but that's not because of anything with women. My older brother, that has nothing to do with my marriage thoughts. My older brother used to, my parents were immigrants, so they let him write the letters from Santa to me when I was a kid. And he wrote a letter when I was really young that said, if you're nice to your brother and do everything he says, I'll bring you all the presents you want for Christmas. However, on the back of the letter, it said, but if you don't, I'm going to kill you in your sleep.
What?
Love Santa.
Ho, ho, ho.
Love Santa. And there was a picture of Santa with a knife.
Oh, no.
Oh, so you guys laugh at that.
I love that.
And you were how old?
I was 7.
Oh,
and so,
terrifying.
But here's how conniving he was. And I do this as a joke.
And how,
but it's
how
also
much older?
True. He's 6 years older. So he was 13.
That's Steve's brother, 6 years
same
older.
Same thing.
So,
that's evil.
Older so brothers are evil.
They're right. Torturous.
He didn't beat me up. That's the only thing he did. But here's how clever he was, even back then. He had... he just showed the front of the letter to my mom. He goes, who wrote this letter? Thinking I didn't believe in Santa. And she's like, Santa, of course. So I don't like Christmas. Yeah.
I'm sad now.
You don't like the whole holiday of Christmas?
Well, I mean, it's my parents are in Florida, so I was by myself on Christmas. And the burrito place that I have my annual Christmas dinner closed this year without telling me. So I didn't have food.
Come to our house next Christmas. Yeah. We have 7 trees.
All right.
You can have a tree.
I can have a tree.
You can have your own tree.
Okay.
Well, we're celebrating in the studio with Steve and Johnny, and they'll be having their cheap date, Life After Dark, New Year's Eve extravaganza, and someone on the line wants to join our conversation. Hello, taxi driver Bob. How are you doing?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good.
I want to talk to you for the longest time. You've been making your guest appearances on different time slots since you've been gone, but I really miss you a lot and always will miss you during the nighttime. You know, Nick has been doing a great job and everything, but after listening to you for so many years, you know, I don't work a night schedule so much anymore. I just happen to
Neither
be out tonight later. So what, I'm out of curiosity, are you guys half here and half down in Florida? And what have you guys been doing, writing?
All of the above. As a matter of fact, I mentioned earlier, I'm working on an album that hopefully will be out in 2017. We've started our second book. The working title is Life After Dark, and that's going to be all about radio. And then Johnny is working on some cookbooks, some gluten-free cookbooks. So we're having fun, and we kind of split our time between here and Florida. We're involved with some things with the radio station
down
there.
We winter in Chicago, though.
Yeah. Because which
that's reversed.
We don't want our pipes to freeze.
We don't want to be predictable. Don't tell them that. That
sounds
crazy.
Don't tell people when they're leaving town.
They're
saying on the air that they don't leave during the wintertime.
We really don't.
That's all a trick.
We don't. Hey, Bob, I just for grins, answer me yes or no. Your phone number starts 847-477. You're still in my phone book.
See, you think we don't remember you.
Yes, you're still in there. I'll text
you
later.
I wish you a happy new year. And has Steve been behaving himself? You haven't had to hide his underwear or socks lately, have you?
Oh, Bob.
That'll be a chapter in the book, too.
Thank you for listening all those years, Bob.
All right, good night.
Good night, taxi driver Bob. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we also have Ray on the line. Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Hello, Patty. Very good. And happy holidays to you, Steve, Johnny, and Paul.
Hey, Ray.
Thank you.
Steve, I followed your career forever. You were doing overnights at LS, middays at IND, et cetera. A friend of mine told me years ago, you were a musician, and you were in a band called The Exceptions with Peter Cetera. Is that true?
No, but I'll tell you where that comes from. Peter Cetera, who, of course, was with Chicago, Peter Cetera was in one of my bands. In fact, he played bass on one of the last records that I made before I got into radio. Peter later went on to be with The Exceptions. The name Exceptions came from the drummer in my band, and The Exceptions was Peter Cetera and Cal David and Marty Greb and Freddie Page and...
All the guys
went on to do some really good things. Cal is, in fact, I was just in touch with Cal. Cal is one of the best blues musicians you will ever hear. He's alive and well and out in California.
Marty Greb is still performing. He went on to be with Bonnie Raitt for many years.
Yeah, he was her
Willie
musical
Nelson
director
and,
for a while.
Yeah.
And Peter, unfortunately, was not able to reunite with Chicago at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There were a whole lot of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame dumb things that prevented that from happening. But
they were all Southside boys.
Yeah.
They're doing a special on them on CNN about Chicago.
Yeah.
May I ask one bonus question, please?
Of course.
Sure, for bonus points. Okay.
There we go.
Thank you. Steve, the fellow who I talked to, his knowledge was unbelievable about old Chicago rock.
Okay.
He said you recorded under a different name, your real name, for a company called Alvin Records.
Oh, I know what he's talking about. And the answer to that would be yes.
I never knew that.
And don't got, yes. In fact, we have
don't
that.
Point that at
that
me.
CD.
That was an index finger.
Yes, we
have that CD. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of details about that only because I've said for years, King is not my real last name. We try to have a little bit of privacy, so... but that is me, and that was the first record I ever made, and it showed up on a rockabilly album that was released in England, as a matter of fact.
Were we like 17 then?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, unbelievable. And thank you guys again, and happy holidays.
Thank you.
Happy holidays,
Ray. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much for calling.
Ray just won a bet.
He did. Yeah, really?
What?
He just got... raise some extra money for the 12th day of Christmas.
This guy knows minutia, though. This guy he's friends with. It's like, whoa.
All the stations that you've been at and the things that you've recorded.
But that's been a freaky thing. Over the last year, I found out that about six of my records are now alive and well and on various albums and selling over in different parts of Europe.
That's awesome.
I'm going to be his manager. I was going to say, track down some of that residual.
We need an attorney.
I did entertain him for years. Yeah.
Get out.
Okay. You mentioned Freddie Page. How do I know that name? He was in
Chicago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Freddie's real last name, and I'm not telling any tales out of school, real last name was Papillardo. Southside kid from Blue Island. Mm-hmm. Freddie, if you've heard the song Take Me Back to Chicago by Chicago, mm-hmm. they wrote that about Freddie after he passed away.
Oh. Bringing his body back.
And they paid to, the members of Chicago uh-huh. paid to have him
His mother was a,
back to Chicago.
A listener, a regular listener. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful because every time we played something by Chicago, she'd call. Yeah. Thank you for remembering my
boy.
Lovely. Well, who wouldn't remember your boy?
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, we are hanging out with Steve and Johnny. And so many people have been calling and texting and wanting to share their greetings with you. And, of course, everyone can hear Steve and Johnny again, their own show, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., their New Year's Eve show, their extravaganza, their Cheap Date Life After Dark New Year's Eve extravaganza. And that starts at 10 p.m., and they're going to ring in the new year from New York at 10.
Right.
Right? Is that 10? No, at 11. 11's going to be
That'll be 11 o'clock, yeah. And then
there has to be New Year somewhere at 10, no? Somewhere in Canada? I don't. Well, maybe it's somewhere over the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to be new. And then, of course, you have to get all that on yourself.
And, of course, midnight with the people right out on Michigan mm-hmm. Avenue. And 1 o'clock, Prescott, Arizona for their boot drop. And we're going to have, real quick, we're going to have some of the people from The Empty Pockets in the studio with us. Ronnie Rice will be performing. Lisa McClowry. And Sydney Friedman, the musical mentalist, and a whole lot of other surprises.
Our chiropractor will be here.
What? Wait.
Readjustments?
Yeah. If you're lucky, you'll get an adjustment.
Wow. Your chiropractor and everything. Yes. And everyone should be following Steve and Johnny at stevenjohnny.com. Go to their website. You can go to their Facebook page, which is also Steve and Johnny Show. And your book, A Little More Less, is doing fantastically as well.
Yeah,
we're so pleased with that. And if you want to get a copy of A Little More Less, it's about the relationship we were privileged to have with the legendary Les Paul.
And if you want us to come to your library and speak,
I think that'd
let
be a great
us know.
Idea.
Because we just had a great, great turnout at the Elgin Library.
Oh, that was fun.
Rockford Library, Kenosha's Museum. We've had so much fun at these places because people who come out are GN listeners. And so they listen to us yammer, and then they ask questions, and they ask about you, mm-hmm. and they ask about everybody at the station.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it is.
And go to alittlemoreless.com. What was mm-hmm. that, Steve?
Or you can call 312-912-8639.
To order the book,
the book.
And also to book you at a library.
Yes.
Sure.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I love that. More with Steve and Johnny and Paul Farber when we come back on 720 WGN. Wake me up before you go, go. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me are Steve and Johnny.
Hello.
I'm so happy to have you here.
Now, wait, I want to go back to something you said earlier.
About cheesesteak and
cheesesteak. No, you said you can't sing. You said you don't have you don't know when to come in. You're a great dancer. You have a great sense of rhythm.
I can dance. Yes, but I can. And by the way, Jim's here, too.
Yes.
Elton, Jim, where's your...
Is that you have to sit in my lap.
Am I here? Yeah, there I am.
Yeah, there you are. Paul Farber, by the way. Paul, Jim, yes. Jim, Paul. And I love to dance, but we had live band karaoke one night. Actually, Craig had booked this great live band, which we'd love to have back. But I love Patsy Cline. Walking After Midnight's one of my favorite songs. And I knew that I was taking on, any Patsy Cline songs in it. But I'm not that bad, but I don't know, because they didn't have like the bouncing ball of like Sing Now. It's just like,
you don't know when to come in.
Like sheet music. And I was like, I don't know. It's happening right now.
The bouncing ball is good.
Yes. I need to follow along to something. Yeah.
Next time we're in with you, I'm bringing the guitar and you are going to sing.
Walking After Midnight? Okay.
Yeah. I'll bring my guitar too. And your
djembe. Okay.
And your djembe? That would be very good.
Cool. All right. Guitar, there we go.
So I'll bring my accordion.
I'll burn it.
Play all the songs from all the artists that we lost in 2000.
That would be a 7-hour show.
Yeah, no kidding. What a crazy year.
I'll create the medley.
Now, Jim, had you seen Elton John and George Michael? Because I know you've been to hundreds of.
166, to be exact.
Oh, yes. I lied the other day and said it was 173.
No, 166, 170, or 167 will be in Vegas. In February. But yeah, ironically, thanks to George Michael, Elton wound up getting another number one song from a song he wrote 20 years before, they did a duet of Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me in 1991, because he did a George Michael did a cover album. And so they initially sang that together at the Live Aid show at Wembley in 85. So then he covered that song because he's, you know, 53 years old. He's right in the sweet spot of being an Elton John fan from the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so they did this duet, and what was very cool about it, they recorded it in another city live.
Right.
But they filmed the video at the Rosemont Horizon.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that was at the Rosemont.
Yeah, they did it in a few different places, but they show some wide shots of the, and then they show Elton backstage in the Horizon.
So that's George Michael in the blue blazer?
With the blue blazer. And then Elton comes out for the second verse. And so I was a George Michael fan, but not a huge fan, but I had heard through the grapevine that Elton might be showing up at the George Michael concert. Mm-hmm. So I went.
So you were there.
Oh, yeah. And then so all of a sudden, you know, we're just sort of sitting there, and I heard the first notes of Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. I'm like, okay, if this is going to happen, it's going to happen now. And then at that time, you know, Elton he went into rehab in the Chicago area.
He was right
at Lutheran General at the Parkside Center.
You were there at the same time.
Oh, were you in the room next to him?
Not a rehab.
Wow, we just got a scoop.
Yeah. You were in rehab. You were physical therapy.
After the double-decker bus.
Okay.
Wow.
Elton wasn't there for a bad knee.
He wasn't driving the bus.
He was there for alcohol and drugs and bulimia. But yeah, so he was in Chicago. So I think at that time, he was there in 91 or in 90. And so I think he had like a very close connection. I think he still has some of his sponsors in Chicago that he still talks to.
Right.
So he had a close connection to Chicago at that time. And so sure enough, he comes out and the place went nuts because he hadn't been in concert for a couple of years because he was really having some very serious problems. So it was great. And then that song turned out to be number one, both in the UK and in the United States. So, and that was a 20-some-year-old song at the time.
Yeah.
And so George Michael.
Was really weren't a big fan of George Michael.
No, I wasn't. I love George Martin, though.
Well, lost George Martin this year, too, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
You mentioned Elton. One of the other people that we lost this year that really devastated me.
Leon Russell.
Yeah. And that wonderful album with Leon.
Yeah, it's called
Elton.
The Union. It came out in 2010. And he brought Leon out for all the, and I saw several of those shows. And it was just great to see a guy like Leon Russell, who I had seen in like some bad little bar in Schaumburg.
What?
Like in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm like, this is Leon Russell.
Yeah.
And he's playing to 100 people in some bar.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, and so it was so great. Elton brought him back. They did this album, and he brought him back to the 20,000-seat arenas.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's great.
He just was able to feel that because he was a big Leon Russell. Yeah. Very short period of time, but in the early 70s, he was the rock star.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was very cool. But he wasn't he was in kind of bad health at the time.
Oh, yeah.
We've been teasing a story, by the way, all night. We've never gotten to your cheesecake.
Well, I heard you earlier that you always used to tease a story and never got to it.
I don't know.
We all do that.
I know.
Let's come back in the new year.
Cheesecake and security, I believe, was.
Do you want the really truncated version?
You can go for it. Okay. It's just Jim's next.
This was
no big deal.
That's right.
Stick over here. If you got nowhere to go, just sit. You know, don't
sit
move.
Tight.
Post 9/11.
Okay.
Everybody's on high security alert.
Christmas holiday.
A friend of ours, nicknamed Cheesecake Marianne.
She danced under that name.
On her way to work,
the cherry on top.
Pulls up outside of the Tribune Tower, runs in with a big
large
box of cheesecake.
Drops this cardboard box in the middle of the lobby and says,
"This is call Steve and Johnny.
This is for them."
She runs out,
and gets in her car, and tears off.
We get a call from security.
Oh my God.
As they are out on Michigan Avenue with the dogs
box.
And the guns aimed at the boxes of cheesecake.
Lights are
absolutely
flashing,
true.
And they've got German shepherds. We had bomb-sniffing German shepherds at the time.
Well, at least
we had German shepherds out there sniffing around our
cheesecake.
Cheesecake
can be dangerous to your hips, but I don't know.
If it rises to the occasion of calling in SWAT.
Yeah.
We had to give up a cheesecake just to quiet them down. One for the dogs, one for the guys.
Well, there was a lot of paranoia. At that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you guys, I mean, this is interesting, I don't know about you, Patty, too, especially at this time of the morning or night. When someone brings in food from the public, Do you eat it, or do you have a taster? Craig get the first bite? Yeah. I mean, how does that
we
work?
We had engineers that we used for that. Yeah. Engineers were for that. We would just line them up and say, and engineers would always go, oh, I'll take it.
Because I never thought twice about it, and then somebody said, you know, you should be careful.
Yeah.
Just dig in right away. Not, and you hate to say
well,
that.
Well, after the movie Talk Radio, I said,
that'll do it. No, I don't think that I ever, we don't get that much homemade food.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it looks really good.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, wait a minute, though, you know. I mean, all we need is a little
Hinkley thing. Well, we even had guests that would say to me, did you make this? And I go, yes. You're sure you made it?
Oh,
yes.
Wow. The guest questioned you.
Wow. And then all of a sudden the guests say, I feel funny. Why do I feel funny? And I just go, hee. Because it's crazy you can make them think that there's something in the brownies.
Well, you love those mushrooms. So.
Well, you know, I believe in a healthy brownie.
Yeah, I bet
and
you
I don't
do.
Like a guest that won't talk. So you give them the right brownies, and you know, it worked every time.
Whatever makes things flow. Exactly. Yes. There's your magic trick right there.